You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment.
What's up, everybody? Here is the long-awaited audio podcast version of the Glass Cannon Podcast Goodbye Party, the GCP Goodbye Party that we recorded live 2 days after the finale came out. I honestly debated for a long time, over 2 weeks, whether or not to release this for a couple of reasons. One, I didn't really want to do it to begin with, to be completely honest. But like, I also understood that people wanted to hear something like this. And I had the same feeling with Androids and Aliens. Like, I just want these final episodes to just speak for themselves. But I also think it's fun to talk about it as well. But the main reason I didn't want to release it is, as we did the show live on Twitch, it's really meant to be watched. And I know I say that about a lot of our content, but this one is a slideshow where I go through all 6 books of the Adventure Path and we see the pages from the book and everything and then discuss. And so we weren't really thinking about like describing everything because it was just a moment by moment honest reaction to the story, a behind the scenes look at the actual Adventure Path. So anyways, I just really debated whether or not to put this up, but I know there are some people who will get a kick out of it nonetheless. And it's, I think you're going to find it interesting. It's just one of those things that I think really plays better, if you watch the video. So if you're interested in that, it's going to go up on YouTube. And if you're not, then, I hope you enjoy, this. And I also hope you're enjoying all these releases of our Glass Cannon Lives that are dropping on this feed. I'd say somewhere right around the end of August, I think. I have the exact days somewhere on a spreadsheet. But by then, we wish we will be caught up with the tour. And on weeks that we're not touring, we will be doing the show on Twitch and then releasing that podcast. So there's going to be all sorts of new content on here that you don't have to travel the country to see. But if you do enjoy seeing us live, or if you've never seen us live and always wondered what it's like, I hope you come join us. We have so many dates coming up. I mean, next week we're going to be in DC and Columbus. And then 2 weeks later, we're going to be in Los Angeles and San Francisco. And then first week of August, we're going to be at Gen Con doing 2 shows at the Helium Comedy Club, as well as a bunch of other shows at Gen Con and a booth on the exhibition floor. So just check out glasscannonnetwork.com/tour if you're interested in joining us on the road. But in the meantime, please enjoy our little goodbye party here, and we will see you real soon.
It's so hard to say goodbye to yesterday.
Folks, this is it. This is the swan song, the sayonara, the final goodbye to 7 years of our lives.
Goodbye.
See ya. Grant, cut the string. Cut the string. That's it. We got the subs. Let's call it.
We made our made nut. Let's get out of here.
What is going on, folks? We are going to have some fun tonight. We're going to take a long walk down memory lane and share some of our favorite memories. And I don't know, might get emotional, might not. Certainly going to have some laughs, and might say something we regret. Either way, this is going to be must-watch television. Thank you to the 2,000 people that are watching right now. Guys, how are you feeling? We haven't really talked since we dropped the finale. I saw Skid and Joe today in the office because we're cleaning it out. But even we didn't even talk about it. We just kind of kept our head down and made jokes about things we were throwing out. How is everybody doing?
All Matthew stuff. We made jokes about all Matthew stuff we were throwing out.
Look at his favorite hemorrhoid cushion.
Imagine how expensive this is. Bonk.
I mean, that's an improvement from the way it used to be when you just threw them out.
Yeah,
you yes, just throw just go to the office and be like, "What's this?" And throw it out. And I'd like I'd be in for the next recording. Like, what happened to this thing? And
you're
like,
"What happened to my original manuscript?"
You're welcome. Yeah.
Joe, now we've learned to have fun with it while we do it.
Hasn't Troy thrown out really important, like, technical things that were required for, like, lights and cameras and stuff? Yes. And, like, we show up and I'm like, what happened?
Troy doesn't understand that Marie Kondo refers to what sparks joy of your own possessions, not other people's.
I am the Marie Kondo.
This is meaningless to me.
Well, how is everybody doing? I don't think you guys haven't listened to the episode yet. Am I correct? Has anyone listened all the way through?
No, I am about an hour into the first part. And it's interesting because we don't even start the episode an hour into the first part, which was shocking to me on the re-listen. The other thing was that made me think, get really nostalgic, was... I stopped doing that. I stopped listening to the Glass Cannon podcast the day it released on the feed, you know. And when I was listening to it, especially the tease, because it had some of those earlier elements, all I pictured myself in Astoria walking the street to work in the weeks we released the podcast and just listening to every episode beginning to end and laughing and being so pleased with myself and my friends. And it just brought back those great memories.
Yeah. I mean, since we came back from COVID break, I edited everything since the Quivixia fight on. You and I used to share the editing, so you didn't even get a chance to listen to them in the editing booth. But I stopped listening as well, so the ones you edited, I didn't listen to. I did have the pleasure to listen to the last 120 of them, but... yeah, I mean, it's a long listen. I hope everybody here tonight has... spent the 6.5 hours to catch up to the finale, because there's probably going to be some spoilers, but honestly, we're going to talk about the whole road that led up to the finale, let alone get into the nitty gritty of what happened.
There's a lot of beef in chat. I'll say that. It's a lot of beef. Spoiler. There's a lot of beef in the chat.
It's a hot joke. Beef really killed.
Beef really killed. I just thought it was nice that after all this time, after all of these, you know, there's so many callback jokes, wonderful jokes of the series. And it does feel like there's kind of a gap. It feels like they're all in the first three books, like the jokes that lasted a really, really long time.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got a new one in 326, so it's great.
How do you feel about now being Beef Boy instead of Bread Boy? It feels kind of like we're sexualizing you a little bit more with Beef Boy.
Beef Boy, B-O-I.
Oh, hey, Beef Boy.
Beef Boy and Bun Bun.
Beef Boy and Bun Bun. Throw tricks.
A match made in heaven.
Bun Bun.
Buddy Cop Comedy coming to a theater near you.
It's like a manga. Beef Boy and Bun Bun. Lone Wolf and Cub. Grant and Matthew, am I correct in saying that you haven't listened to an episode of this since the Plague House?
That is incorrect.
I feel like you've never listened to this show, Matthew.
No, I listened to the show. I mean, when I was writing teases, I listened to every episode.
Oh, okay.
I didn't listen to the edited episodes. I listened to the raw and uncut.
Okay.
I have.
I'm sure you didn't do any skipping when you were just making teases. You probably listened beginning.
I started skipping hardcore.
You wanted to take it all in, right?
No, when we did when we started doing the last week on, then I started skipping ahead.
Oh, no, the truth comes out. Grant, what about you? Obviously, you sweeten all these, but how much are you like, I'm going to sit down with my hot cup of noodles and listen to the latest release of the Glass Cannon podcast?
I think it absolutely stopped when Androids and Aliens became a thing and alongside with a full-time job. And then it just, like, with all the content we're producing now, I just don't have time. I listen to good chunks of, like, everything. Mm-hmm. I hear Matthew say mean things about me on shows I'm not on, and I get upset. So, you know, I get those highlights. You know, the most important, it's kind of like a Reader's Digest of the Glass Cannon Network. Right. That's what I get in my position.
I just want to listen to stuff that makes me feel bad.
Yeah.
Skid, I feel like you're an avid listener. Am I wrong?
I used to be. I think it was
And then we kind of fell off.
Book five.
I didn't really. Book a lot five. Of fire giant fights. I got
that's when you
bored.
Cut your yeah, Patreon
just,
sub.
It just wasn't for me. It turns. But no, I was
of so many things. I also wanted to listen to them.
I know. I was just like, I don't know. Just I got alienated at some point. But I was listening like Joe, like every day, release day early on. Mm-hmm. And it was awesome. It was like, just having that sort of immediate historical record of your gaming session with your friends was great. And just, yeah, laughing at the old jokes again and everything. But I think, like, once we went full time, we were doing so much stuff. And it was just like, I got sick of the sound of my own voice. So that's basically what it was. So I stopped listening. But no, it's still a good show.
I had objections to the banter section of the show.
Sure.
Yeah. You were,
get to the game already.
You were the one writing on those message boards.
You know, it's funny because when we started, I thought our audio sounded great. But as I was preparing for the finale and going back and listening to early episodes, it's unbearably bad, which is
it
shocking.
It is not unbearably bad. You clearly don't listen to any actual play podcast.
This is true. It's not like we had somebody's iPhone sitting in the middle of a table while we all yelled into it. But when you think of how far we've come, even our remote sound just blows it out of the water.
The greatest thing that ever happened to us was moving into that tiny studio that was owned by a purported audio engineer. And we thought, there'll be no problems here. And then there was like, you could pick up AM radio if you pointed a mic in the wrong direction there. And that necessitated me figuring out how to do multi-track and do everything from there. And, you know, that's a big... Having those in post is a big deal. So.
Well, it's wild. 326 episodes, and that's just of this show. And multiple parts. Some of those episodes had multiple parts. There was somebody on the fan Discord or our Patreon Discord that broke it all down. I wish I had brought it up before we started the stream. Like, they did all the math of like how many hours, how many, what the average time of an episode is, which is like right around 90 minutes. Yeah, I might be able to track it down. And
the average length of an episode is an hour and a half.
I knew it. Yeah, I feel like it was because we had so many long ones that that bumped it up. The shortest episode was around 58 or 59 minutes, and I remember being so mad. I was like, I should just do a really long intro to get it over the hour mark. But
I'm shocked you didn't.
I know. I didn't feel like it. But yeah, it's just really wild to look back. So that's what we're going to do today. Is we're going to look back, and for the first time ever, I'm going to show you pages from the Giant Slayer adventure. And I thought this would be a fun way.
I'm very excited
to spark discussion as we take a walk down memory lane by looking at the creatures and the maps and everything.
Unlike George R. R. Martin, Troy has pages, and he's going to show
pages. I finished my adventure, George.
I finished my pre-written adventure, George.
I finished the adventure somebody else wrote for me.
George.
Can I pull back the curtain just a tad? Like, you sent us the presentation. You risked sending us it to us in advance.
Uh-huh.
I haven't really looked ahead, but I did notice there's a fair number of slides in this presentation. So how long are
curious
we
curious how much time you expect to spend on each slide?
We're going to be cooking through these. They're really here just to spark discussion. There might be a slide. I'd be like, hey, remember that guy? And then we move on. That's it. Grant, let's take it to these slides. And the first ones that I want...
Before we start,
I have
a little tiny bottle of Prosecco that I'm going to open. Celebrate here.
Ooh, I have some scotch that I'm going to pour for myself.
I got rum that I took from the office today that we've had for 2.5 years with a Diet Coke.
And I've got squirt.
Grant has a squirt.
You made me.
And Grant's squirting, if you're listening to the audio version of this.
It's worth tuning
literally
in.
Literally squirting. It's all over the place.
And after doing Cannon Fodder bonus episode with Troy on Saturday night, I brought a truly mango chili.
Ooh.
Dude, jump into one of these.
You got my fucking backup right here.
Oh, you got it as a backup. Too long.
Great. No, we're not going.
No,
on.
We're not.
We're keeping this tight.
Yes.
Right, first, the initial slides that I see look like anatomy. So once and for all, we're going to answer the question that started the finale episode.
Yes, we're gonna start by answering the question, how long is a storm giant's penis?
Vitruvian Giants.
I was always very careful. I didn't want you guys to see the covers of the adventures. I didn't want you to see the titles of the adventures. But each of the covers had the final boss on the cover. So I didn't want to, obviously didn't want to show you that. But one thing I regret is not showing you the inside covers, because they all had the pictures of giants done in the style of the Vitruvian Man. So I just wanted to quickly show you these. I did them in what I think is the order of strength of giant. But when you go back to book one, in the foreword to Giant Slayer, I think it was Rob McCreary, who was the lead dev on this, said something to the effect like, this is an adventure about giants, right? But even the lowest level giant could squash a party of first, second, third level adventurers.
Yeah, so I was reading that. Yeah.
We created a giant that the PCs could handle, and that's what the cave giant was.
And they hamstrung him too.
Yeah, with the chains.
He had orcs holding him on chains. Remember, he started swinging the orcs.
Yeah, in fact, our first I'll jump up to a slide here. Already going to make Grant work by jumping up to slide 14. You'll see an image of what that giant looks like being held by chains.
Yeah.
Remember, he would swing the orcs around, and that was one of those big Gormley flying and raining down fire moments.
My memory of that, and I could be wrong, is that was her first flight.
It was the first time I levitated.
That's my memory. Wow. It's like the first time we were like, she is like a goddess.
It's very scary. Like unto a god.
Yep.
But isn't that cool?
We thought she was just a weirdo, but now she's a goddess.
This is great art.
Isn't this fantastic? The adventure is obviously called Giant Slayer. You know you're going to fight giants, but it's not until the almost end of book one that you fight one. But I can still remember the reveal, because you're fighting all the orcs, and then you go up the crenellated tower and you look out and you see a fucking giant by the barter stones. And so you know that fight's coming, and then you actually ended up taking it on.
Yeah.
But just
I got vibes from that was kind of like the... You know, they have a cave troll. Like, they see it before it's there, and you're just like, oh, get ready. Yeah. Oh, no. And it's just like, boom. Yeah.
Yep.
Awesome.
Just going quickly through these images, though, because I wanted to include them. I think they're really cool. You got the cave giant, and then you've got the ogre, of course, followed by the hill giant, classic. That's what Grenzeldeck was. The marsh giant, which may have been created for this adventure. I'm not 100% sure.
Almost killed Gormley.
Is the marsh giant the one? That's what you fought outside of the entrance to the Vault of Thorns. That thing almost killed Gormley. You had to wait a few episodes for that to happen.
And they're sort of like Lovecraftian, too. They have like that kind of hybrid fish kind of background.
Oh, yeah, they do. With the teeth, they kind of have a... what is that creature that looks like that?
The lure fish with the little lure that pops out in front of its head. They have those big mouths like that with the teeth.
Yeah, the lantern fish. Shadow of Rinsmith, like giant size.
When you guys
old
were
ones? Is that in the old ones?
You were in Minderhall's Valley, Eastern Minderhall's Valley, and you fought some undead giants. Those were actually undead deep marsh ones. Giants.
Wow.
Which didn't really come out. I think you guys didn't hit your checks, and I was excited about it. And then, of course, your Etten, classic two-headed giant.
A lot taller than I thought.
Yeah, they're pretty big. Well, they have two heads and four legs. You've got your stone giant, which had already been featured pretty prominently in like Rise of the Rune Lords and whatnot, but it was nice to see them in the middle. And then frost giants, tomb giants, one of those killed Lork, fire giants, badass.
It's really, given their sheer size, it's shocking how easily we mopped the floor with so many of them.
Mm-hmm. we had a gun.
And, that's true. One of
and
us had
create
a gun.
Pit.
We brought a gun to a sword and sorcery fight.
Then you got your ash giant, which was what you fought on top of the tower in book six before you joined the castle.
Oh, the diseased, like skin diseased ones.
Mm-hmm. I thought we were going to fight more of them. Was that the only ones we fought?
There were they were just in that area. I think there might have been one in the castle that you fought. I'm not 100% sure, but they were all in the crater for the most part. And then cloud giants, obviously, you took over. They were running Zephyr Hall. You fought
Nalbor and Albia and all the guards.
All the guards. Renfall. And Renfall. And then, of course, the Storm Giant. Unfortunately, the image is a woman, so we will truly never know how long the penis is.
It's like they knew. I want to say that with one thing that stands out to me is, with the exception of the Ash Giants, as the giants seem to increase in size and power, they also increase in attractiveness and handsomeness.
They do, because they're more intelligent and they know how to take care of themselves.
Right.
They have a skincare regimen.
Right. That poor skin disease of the Ash Giant. But everyone else looks cooler and, like, yeah, like, well, they'd get into a nightclub as opposed to the earlier ones.
We got a sense, too, based off of the recruitment and basically who was matriculating up the ranks, that there was a class system associated with whatever their birth was, right? So, like, this also seemed to be that strata as well, right? And it seemed to be might versus right, but it also seems like the wealthier a giant class got, the more they could have cosmetic surgery and look beautiful or whatever the equivalent was to that in this time, right?
Right. You got money, you eat better. You get a good gym membership.
Right.
if you don't, you're a gross hill giant.
You only lift bespoke boulders made by Rogue.
It's time for me to finally reveal to you the cover of book one of the Giant Slayer Adventure Path. Here it is. It is the Battle of Bloodmarch Hill. And then on the cover is the cave giant, when actuality, Screed was the big bad. But
the skeleton giant,
that was a scary fight. Yeah. Because we went into it after
Screed. Yeah. If you had gone left instead of right, you fight it before Screed. But you guys fought Screed first and then came around.
What you don't see in this picture is Screed's body lying dead just off screen, and the gunshot went through his head.
It's hard to illustrate like justice so perfectly, Matthew. You can't just draw justice. It's a metaphor.
Crazy Joe Gallo showed up.
Battle of Bloodmarch Hill, and then moving on quickly, you see here the image of the Pathfinder Iconics fighting that. I don't know if was it a haunt in the Plague House when all those bodies came up from the bed.
That was a haunt, yeah.
Classic, the Plague House. I loved the Plague House. I knew that, like, the adventure started with little combat, but then it was all investigation, which I thought would be really good to get in the flow of the show. But I was so excited for you to get into the Plague House because that was a more traditional dungeon. And that's really where it all started. Obviously, you fought the wolves. That was your first actual combat, was against those wolves.
The Wall of Wolf Street.
The Wall of Wolf Street. And then there were the Freedom Town Assassins, which I'll show you in a second. There is Agrimash, the hammer that no one used or wanted.
Am I looking, in reading this adventure background of book one,
which
they don't mention the Storm Tyrant in the adventure background? Like, it's just totally focused on Screed and the giant and like his plans?
I don't know.
I just don't see anything about it.
Screed and Grenzeldeck.
Yeah, that's like the book one and book two bosses are really covered in the. I thought the adventure background was going to be like a giant is assembling an army. And then we'll zoom into this.
Oh, wait, no, like, Volstis. Volstis is mentioned.
He is? Oh, would you do a word search?
I don't know how to do that
on computers.
I'm just using my eyes and reading.
Yeah, so middle of the second paragraph.
It's kind of a word search.
Word has reached Grenzeldeck that far to the south in the Mindspin Mountains, a storm giant calling himself Volstis the Storm Tyrant has begun gathering an army of giants under his banner. Like Tar Bafon before him, Volstis plans to dominate the hordes of Belks and blah, blah, blah.
Okay, all right, so they did mention it.
So it's cool, there, but it's not until the end of book two that you really know that, like, oh, that's the ultimate big bad.
Troy, right. Yes. You seemed upset before Joe asked a question about no one wanting this hammer.
Right. Agrimash, it's a big deal, and nobody really wanted it.
I wanted it.
Oh, beef! Which became a theme throughout the entire adventure. It was like, here is this amazing artifact. Who wants it? And you guys, that doesn't fit my build.
Yeah. Sorry, just had to mention that Steve Geddes just gifted 100 subs.
Oh, my gosh. Steve Geddes!
Steve!
Oh, is that why you buddy. Said... Is that why you said beef?
That's why I couldn't help myself. I beefed. Thank you, Steve. Thank you to Reverend Mother and Voice of Boom. Hey, buddy. Thank you guys so much for the gifted subs. Anyway, sorry
to interrupt. Steve, the thunder, bringing the thunder from down under.
That's Agrimash. No one cares. You didn't want it.
I did want it.
It's so
you
weird.
Stole it from me.
Will
I should have
wielded that at
it.
The end, and I was dumb. Yeah.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
What did it do that we never found out? Was it
It has the resizing thing, right?
Yeah, if you crit, you can shrink a giant.
Oh, that's cool. Awesome.
Yeah,
well, yeah, we knew that. We knew that.
But, giant
it's, but it levels yeah. up at some point. It levels up after you hit it on the forge.
Yeah, right? If you hit it on the forge, it does some other cool shit. Obviously, it allowed you to reforge all those items. But I don't know. It was a fun weapon early on that just never really... It kind of got recast with some of your other weapons. The only reason I included this page is because it's the page, the one page, as I continued to do printouts of these books that I would keep. So when we moved on to book two, I kept this page. Book three, this I just threw it out today, actually, while we were cleaning out the office. I had the original page. And I kept it just to remember the NPCs in True Now. You see there the little description of the town. And it tells you, I mean, that's the only time most of them are mentioned are right there. So when you guys went to the council room, I was just populating it on the spot. Now it's like, oh, you see a dwarf woman. Her name is Agret Stogenstar, and then obviously the two Catherine Zeta Joneses became a big thing for us. But I mean, this is all I had to go off.
Kessin Plum was in the book.
Kessin Plum was in the book. Yeah. So very, very, very interesting to see that. I just threw it out today. I thought about keeping it. I was like, no. It's got to go. And there is our humble city of True Now.
Look at that. Yes. Look at that. I love these maps. I love the maps. It looks sort of like we're talking about on Legacy of the Ancients, the Sandpoint map.
So such a good map.
Yeah, there's just these some of the like the of your home base of like these places that you kind of get this emotional attachment to for protecting and NPCs you grow to know and be fond of and everything. Those are the maps that I really love. And, like, this is one of them. Like, this is awesome.
It's my favorite kind of adventure, like, starting in a town and seeing that town become a character.
What I love about this map, too, is it reminds me of how I would draw out cities in the sand at, like, the beach or in the playpen at school, like, that overhead view. Like, I'd put, like, a pine cone here for my base and this there. And it's, like, I don't know. It ties it back nicely to it being kind of a childhood pursuit that we continue to play as adults. And I really love that.
Any questions about where a certain place is on that map?
The O is where we fought the cave giant, right?
The O is, the Hope Spring.
Hope Spring. Yeah, that's the Hope Spring.
Yeah, and the Barter Stones is H, which you can't see on the map, but it's way south outside of the walls. And then A is the Commons, where the Hope Knife Ceremony takes place.
No, Troy, you're wrong. The Barter Stones, because I looked this up for my flashback, the Barter Stones are N.
Oh, they're you're right.
At the top.
Oh, they're way up top. Yes.
H is the plague house, right?
H is the plague house. I always thought the plague house was further away. But
me too.
I did too.
This is shocking to me that it's this close to town. I thought it was like a day long journey over there.
Right. Nobody knows the plague house better than Gorms.
The south end of town. You have to go through the gate and walk down and around. It's all.
But that was the thing. I'm seeing that you're a little quiet, FYI, on stream. If you want to boost yourself a little.
It's beautiful. And the upper quarter there, MGBF, that's where you guys stay. The Ramble House is one of those.
It's B, right? I think Ramble House is...
Yeah, Ramble House is B.
Yeah.
Right. So funny. And then Lork's House would have been... See where I is? Lork's House is like right next to I.
Oh, wow. South side.
Way south side.
That's where I always imagined it in my mind. Wow. I think that's where the inner quarter is, isn't it? I don't know. It's been a long time.
Is Blood March Hill the whole hill, or is it a section of town? This is something I was unclear about.
The town was built on top of Blood March Hill.
Okay.
It's the whole hill. The whole town, yeah.
Yeah, the whole hill. And then the underneath the cave is where the original settlement was built on top of.
So Agrimash, I'm sorry we moved past this, but Agrimash the Hammer, it is actually the Hammer of Minderhall, right?
It is, right?
I think so.
Minderhall's actual hammer.
Yeah, like this is rumored to be, but I think in the text they say like, no, this is his actual like legendary god hammer.
I think you might be right.
Yeah. Anyway.
Moving on here, look at this guy, the guy whose death kicked off the entire adventure, old Roderick Grath.
We hardly knew you.
Played by, I believe, what's his name? Iron Man.
Oh, was it
Robert Downey Jr.?
Robert Downey Jr.?
And was this pre-Iron Man? Because I feel like his stock wasn't as hot as it was when we cast him.
No, Iron Man came out in 2008.
'08. All right, well, it was definitely pre-Avengers. And I can't believe we got him, but that's Roderick Grath.
Avengers was 2012.
the good Avengers.
We are going to have to pick up the pace. So what...
Yeah, what? Can we skip the next page? It's just text.
Well, the reason I put this here was the only reason I put this here is local lore. If you roll,
I was reading
thing,
this the other day. It's
look at
so
that first
funny.
Line.
Yeah,
it's Tom Exposition's line.
Yes,
word for word. The hub knife is more than a weapon; it's a symbol. So
have you
guys
read
were
Robert
rolling
Grath's
to
latest work, "The Other Side of Contempt." He's our own homegrown writer. It's a controversial poem, but that's what makes Roderick's writing so strong. He's not afraid to push limits.
They're like, they were trying to push this thing that like Roderick was a writer and he was like a poet and he had this real sensitive side. And I just very quickly realized you guys weren't interested in it and I wasn't interested in it. So I let it go pretty quickly. But there's pages in here where it's like, here's an example of Roderick's work. And I was like, who gives a shit? He's dead.
The man's dead. Can't we leave his literary material alone?
But, you know, learning about the graffiti and learning about learning about the graffiti, learning about little bits is what you're supposed to happen before you start doing the tug of war and all that stuff. Next up is Cursed, and then of course old Cham Laringfast, played by Katie Mixon,
the proprietor.
Brynja Kelver, classic, now sits on the council. Yeah. And
I've
then,
seen all of these. I don't know. Did you show us these
the
like
art.
Back in the
when
day?
When we released the art, when Troy
we used to
I
release
used to,
the art, yeah.
Oh, on the Tumblr. These were all on the Tumblr back in the day.
Here's the Freedom Town Assassin, one of your first big combats when you were sleeping in the Ramble House.
That was the first time I remember you being really angry after a combat because you forgot to. You said you were like, something I forgot.
Yeah, I can't remember what the hell it was. It might have been something with that liquid blade.
I don't remember. You're talking about the assassin.
Weren't you guys jumping out of windows or knocking them out of windows?
The poison on the blade, I think.
Oh,
that was the orc. No, that was the orcs outside of the.
That was
on the River Esk.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you were so angry,
so mad about that poison.
You were like mad at us.
Yeah, for not reminding
you
about something you should know.
Like you did something in the next combat that was like, you were like, roll fortitude saves for what? Like, you're getting a cold. I can't remember what it was, but you made us do something. It was really funny.
Look at this guy. He didn't make it to the finale, but we know him and we love him. Old Omas Prom.
Oh, Omas Prom.
Was he cut for time?
Yeah, no, we did. I had nothing for him. He was. He drank himself to death.
I think his story was told. Uh-huh. Don't really need told. More Omas.
There's Sarah Morninghawk.
I thought Omas was one. Never mind.
I got this printout of the journal. Like I got this in session. You brought a printout of it. I remember you handing it to me.
Oh, you jumped ahead. After Sarah and Kurtrezra, you're at the printout.
Yes,
of Roderick's journal.
I also have to give a shout out to Paizo for making orc females look badass. There's like in a lot of fantasy art, they're just like green painted slim supermodels, like heroin chic type stuff. Sarah Morninghawk is a badass that works with iron, and that's cool art.
She looks like a smith. Yeah, she looks awesome.
Clamor.
She looks like a UFC fighter.
Yeah,
she does. Like,
choke you out.
Bam. Yeah.
Kurtrezra, he had a huge role in this. You know, I don't read ahead, so like I had only read book one. It wasn't until book three that I was like, wait a minute, is there an oracle in every one of these books? And I wish I had known that early on. I might have played it up a little bit differently, but he obviously ended up having a huge role in this adventure, whereas other people might play Giant Slayer and he wouldn't. You kind of like, you see him and you move on from True Now. You're never really meant to come back to True Now until like the end of book two you do, and then you never come back again.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I'm glad we did.
I just felt like you were so connected to True Now that it always provided opportunities for character growth to see you caring about True Now, even though you lost like Lork and Gorms, people who lived there. You had a connection to it, so it was important to come back to that.
Side question for you: you said that you didn't read everything, you didn't know how important oracles were. What book had you read the entire adventure? Do you know?
Oh, I didn't start reading book 6 until we finished book 5.
Really?
I never read ahead. I don't want to be influenced by something I read there. I just want to focus on what I'm doing and then I move on. Now, I read the summary, so I get the general gist of things, but the nitty gritty, it's going to go in one ear and out the other for me.
Got it.
Like as I'm prepping different games, learning different systems, going back to Pathfinder, I just ran a Pathfinder 2E game. It's like you realize reading stat blocks and that kind of stuff, like way in advance, is so useless. It's so meaningless. You basically need to read it right before you go. It's like cramming for a test.
And even when I like read the AP for the first time, like as I'm rereading it or prepping for a session, I'm like, oh my God, I totally forgot about this when I read it the first or second time. So you guys assume that I had read this. I didn't read book 6
until
2020.
You read it.
2021. I didn't read book 6.
Wow. Wow.
You knew the general shape of the...
I knew it all, how it was going to play out, but I didn't know at all what the beats were. I just saw the maps and the bosses and the images of the villains, and I was like, oh, God, how am I going to ever run this? there's obviously that big journal handout that was... I think I cut it out and, like, handed it to you.
It was awesome.
Here's the Plague House map. Our first true map, I think. I drew something for when you fought the wolves, because I used to do the hand-drawn maps. Mm-hmm. But this was like one that I could recreate.
Do you remember?
I was trying to think how you would do the maps, like back before we were using Roll20. Would you draw them like while we waited, or did you have them covered up somehow? Like I can't remember.
I drew as we played because I was on the shitty body mic. That's why I sound so quiet in those first 50 episodes. So I didn't like drawing the map and covering it up because I feel like then the players know what the size of the dungeon's going to be. So I would be like, all right, where are you guys going? Oh, you're going to the front door? Great. So I draw the front door and a wall, and then you enter and I draw just the room that you're in with the doors. And so I was drawing all the way along.
That's why there was a lot more editing back then.
Yeah, because we'd pause while I drew. We'd
all pause while you drew. And then it got more intense, and there were times when you'd take the map and leave the room and draw for a bit, and then you'd come back. I've never seen this Plague House map before. This is awesome. So that H5 and that big stone wall, I remember this as that's the first time we saw the name Screed. I remember written on the wall.
Written on the wall, yeah.
It's Screed, and we were like, oh, this is the big boss.
And I think this was where Roderick's journal was given to you by Katresra, but this was the general area where Gorms and Kessen had their rendezvous back in the day.
Yeah, we all know what they did there.
We all know what they...
We covered that.
Sorry.
And then jumping ahead to downstairs, we get... to two very important, three very important people, if you remember. First is Doctani.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Doctani.
Doctani. Yeah. And it was this was a cool thing where it was, this was the first time we dealt with like a half orc and another half orc who had chosen different paths. And I remember there being like a, don't do this. And him being like, I have to do this. And you guys killed him anyway.
I vaguely remember that. I should re-listen to these.
Yeah, they were good. And then, this one, the Shadow Rat.
Yeah. Oh, episode 10. I'll never forget it.
It was 10?
It was miserable. Episode 10.
10?
Yep. And I remember I wrote the T script for AJ, our VO guy, and I was like, the adventure continues.
Maybe. Yeah.
Because I was like, we almost ended it that day. We were so angry, and that was a hot ep.
Yeah, well, if you go forward one page, you'll see who forced you to do it.
Oh, God. Old Dan exposition.
Dan,
you piece of garbage.
Dan exposition. Worst kid ever.
You know, that was just me not wanting you guys to rest, but you resting would have made that fight viable because you didn't have, you needed the channels and you didn't have any channels left. And so that was the first time that I had to like give you another out because it was an unwinnable fight. You had
no
way.
Did we use Brynja's love in that fight? Because it, that, I wonder if it has ghost touch ability, right?
I wonder not until we had the ceremony. We had that. There was a ceremony. Where when we returned it and it was like a burial.
You had to burn it. I think you burnt it and then it, the name appeared and then it got that ability.
It was like at the end of the book or I don't even know if it was the end of book one or later, but yeah, it was like a big, it was four weddings and a funeral, but I can't remember what the actual title was.
It's before the invasion.
Four warnings and a funeral, maybe.
Yeah. Four warnings and a funeral, yeah.
Immediately after the plague house, there was the ceremony. Remember we were standing there like watching the sunset and then the invasion started.
Right.
Yes.
Also, somebody pointed out Zach something in chat earlier was that we could have used Brynja's love to dispel all the darkness that we were having so much trouble with, like in book six.
Is that a light spell on it? A continuous,
it has daylight.
Daylight.
You can do daylight.
That's incredible.
So,
well, really? Thanks for writing in, Zach.
Yeah. Thanks.
Wow.
Thanks for writing in. Where were you 2 months ago?
I just want to point out, I don't want to be a party pooper, but I pace shows every week on Cannon Fodder. This is my job. And I just want to say we're right between episode 10 and 20, and we're 40 minutes into this two-hour show. So out of 326 episodes, we're going to have to cook faster than this.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. We're on slide 33 out of 200, so we're moving faster than you think.
We're not.
We're
moving at the exact speed that I think we are.
Well, enjoy it, because after this, we'll never talk about this show again.
That's true.
Our next image is the Siege of Trunau.
Yeah.
We didn't know about Orc Ferocity. We didn't care, because we were just having fun.
Look at that loser Harsk with a crossbow. What a fool.
Get a gun, Harsk. If I'm not mistaken, if we want to really get lawyerly, I believe it is Orc Ferocity is exactly what we thought it was, but it's not. It's ferocity.
Yeah.
Right. Because I think Orc Ferocity is the keyword that's given to half orcs. But like, this is what we mixed up, and it was like ferocity was the thing that meant that, and it's also, oh shit.
What?
I can't say it now because it's actually a spoiler.
For what?
For episode one of next week's show of Glass Cannon Live number one. It factors in heavily, us knowing the rule.
Yeah, knowing the rule was really important. I think in retrospect now, multiple people would have died had we played it correctly.
Because I don't really understand it.
Stay up longer. And I certainly wasn't. I wasn't adding any combatants to the fight. I wasn't changing hit points. I was just playing it by the book. Waves and waves of orcs. But yeah, by having you just kill them and having them not last until they're below their con.
That is a brutal sequence as written.
Yeah.
It's really surprising.
Waves
and
waves.
I was reading this book yesterday and I was going through it and I was just like, this is insane. I can't believe that they're expecting anyone to live through this.
I think it was also, even though we played it, Pathfinder purists would hate how we actually played it, I think it was a selling point for a lot of people on the show because it was so dire. It really felt like you were fighting an orc siege, a true orc siege.
And it should. It you're right. Like, it should feel that dangerous. So,
yeah. It galvanized the crew. Next page, very quickly, you see Brynja's love and you see the powers that you get when it was consecrated. And then, of course, the map of the inner quarter as it starts to fall apart. So I was wrong about Lork's house, I think. I think Lork's house was around L5, not where I was. But you guys had entered to the northwest and were going across town to get out on the eastern side. And it was I don't even remember this guy, Freedom Town Thug. How'd he get in here?
Gormley shot him with a crossbow for being a little bit mouthy.
Who killed
outside the bar
at the killing grounds?
Who killed?
Yeah,
Kagak of the Rolling Thunder.
Remember the, that was in a narrative, right? Or was that was during the battle?
That was on top of one of
the crenellated tower.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was still talking about the Freedom Town guy. No, I do remember this scald. It's a scald, right?
It's a scald, yeah. The only scald in the adventure, I think. But yeah,
that's
he was awesome.
Cool. Artwork. I've never seen that art.
Yeah, artwork. That's really cool. That's really, really cool.
And then there was this son of a gun here.
Oh, this sucked.
Remember the smoke?
Yes. Yeah. This is where the smoke and everything.
Oh. The orc beast tamer, she let loose her dogs and they came after you.
Yep.
God, that was good. And then there's Urnsel.
Oh, who was Urnsel?
Urnsel was the one with the tattoo on her head.
Yeah, she infiltrated Clamor, and she was the one who stole
that
dagger.
Right. She was working for Screed, but she was like an undercover agent working for Screed, and she took a job at Clamor, and Sarah Morninghawk was like, yeah, there was this half-orc that was working for me, and she took off. And so then you guys thought, we got to find this Urnsel. Urnsel is the one behind the siege.
That's right.
And it turns out...
I think there's a tidbit about her. I think what I was reading is that I think it's implied that she's illiterate, or she speaks in like broken common at least. So she didn't realize like what the knife said. So it was like because it was a replacement knife for Roderick to give for that. It was the Brynja's knife that she gave to him that he lost. So she didn't realize like what the knife said. She just like took it.
Yeah, it was. She did have a cool story. I can't remember what it was, but you guys killed her anyways.
Didn't we fight her right before Jacen died? Literally.
Yeah, it was right in that alleyway.
Yeah.
She was in the alley. I think it was right after Jacen died, maybe. Or maybe before. She was in the alleyway with another guy named Vorum, who you fought them. And then, it was right outside there where Jacen was on his knees. And I always point to that episode being like, if we can get people to listen long enough to the Jacen death, I think we'll have them forever. I really felt that way.
Well, there's two reasons for that. It's because the second reason is because that's how many episodes we recorded before we released.
So, 12. Oh. Episode 12?
Was it 12? I thought that it was more than that. Well, it was that many before we really understood like what we were doing wrong with like the tech and everything. So it was because it's episode 16, I'm pretty sure. And we were 16 episodes in before we could really adjust to what people were saying was like wrong.
Oh,
with stuff.
Yeah. Right.
And I was like, I hope they keep listening, even though it's crap, you know, just through this. And we got a lot better at a lot of things after that point. But yeah, I wanted them to get to that death for that reason too. Cause it was like, nobody's going to do it like this.
I just knew this
is the way that our home games are.
Going into this show, when you guys told me your characters' backstories and you told me about Jacen, it was like one of the only things I knew. I was like, when they get to the inner quarter, I'm killing Jacen in front of him because I think that is going to be a moment that is going to be meaningful for the show. I mean, at the time, I didn't even know that we would finish this adventure or keep doing this podcast, but I knew I wanted to do that. It always made me mad that it took so long to get to that point because I knew that was if a listener would last that long, I think we would get them.
That was like a certain similar moment early on in Game of Thrones, which I won't spoil, but something very similar feel happens in that. It was just like, and that was the moment I was hooked. It's like 100 pages into the first book. I was just like, oh, okay. Same kind of thing. Yeah.
That was the only thing I knew. I mean, there were times, honestly, as we were playing book one, where I hadn't prepped or like I didn't realize like because I was GMing a home game. I wasn't GMing for a podcast. And you guys were like, let's go talk to the fucking blacksmith lady. I was like, I read that once. All right, talking to the blacksmith. And so I need to go back and listen because there was some stuff I was just reading and making stuff up as we were going. You know, obviously I then became an over-preparer, but at the time I think about how different the show was where it was like, oh, you want to do that? Yeah, great. All right. So you go up there and it's a tall building. Tall. Looks like it's a one story building. Just making stuff up on the spot.
One story tall building.
It's a tall one story. Just moving along here, just another one of these guys, the Orc Shieldbreaker. You know, they tried to give you a bunch of different kinds of orcs to fight. And then there's the map of the Hope Spring, where you fought that giant, the cave giant, the Barter Stones, where Lork was put in the catapult. One of the few rules that we got completely right,
and repositioning. And that was all in the book? Like the,
yeah,
like
it says
part
they
of the design of that encounter is like try to get a PC in the catapult.
In the catapult, yeah. And so I read, like, how do I do that? Or I got to grapple, and then I got to reposition. And I remember seeing you walk right next to it, and I was like, if I hit this grapple, I think I can reposition him into the catapult. And you were looking at me like you did for all six books. You're like, wait a minute, you can't do that. And I was like, actually, I can. I mean, again,
I still remember, because at that point, we had already established some trends that continued for 300 episodes, like shitty rolling and Grant being unbelievably gifted by God. And he gave me his big red tumbler.
Oh, big red. Yeah.
Oh, he gave me big red for that roll. And I'll never forget. I rolled it and I believe it was a 4. We'll have to go back to the episode, but it was a you still have it right there. Grant's got it on screen.
It looks like
right
a fruity
down.
Pebble in his hands.
He was like, you can do that. You can use this one, Joe. I'm like, thanks, Grant. And I do it, ba-dum-dum-dum, it hit my coffee table. And it was just like, garbage single digi right around the 4 range.
14.
And I was like, this is awful. The catapult. Awful. I thought he was dead. And I think to this day people 17. Suspect that you fudged the damage dice on that.
I didn't. It was what did we just determine? It was all like straight out of the book. And I rolled really poor damage. Yeah. If you were like in the single digis for hit points by the time I put you up and I roll decent damage, you die. But I think it was only 3d6, which is a lot at first, second level, whatever you were. But I do remember it being a really bad roll and me looking at the roll and being like, I want to lie about what this is because it was so cool that I got him in the catapult. But unfortunately, I didn't lie.
I believe that was the episode where I realized Grant's dice weren't weighted. He was just, as you put it, Joe, unbelievably gifted by God. Because you could not make his die roll well.
Correct.
There is Uskroth's tomb, and it's funny because when we think about book one, I think this is probably the thing we think about least. You think about the relationships between the NPCs, you think about the city, you think about the siege. We never really talk about Screed and Uskroth's tomb.
I thought Uskroth's tomb was amazing at the end because we all got gifts that all seemed like touch for us and made us feel like chosen somehow and tied to the history of the city. It was very spooky and surreal and like this kind of tearing away at a story behind a story that I feel like you're saying now, we never fully touched on or fully understood the past.
Yeah, I mean, that's straight out of the adventure. They were like, gift the PCs 4 items and tie it into their backstories so they'll feel like they are fated to go on this journey. Mm-hmm. And so I did that, and then I reproduced that when we were in Minderhall's Valley with the 4 elements that you had, the 4 artifacts, the Drakesbane horn and stuff you had to chase down.
Yeah.
It's not in the book that you were connected to those things, but I felt like you needed a reason to go do that, so it wasn't just a fetch quest. So I kind of just recycled what they had suggested to do here in book one. But the most memorable part of all of this is that this is the first first sex scene in the adventure.
Yeah.
Is it?
First, really. Yep.
The first glass cannon baby came right here.
What happened? I don't even remember.
When this griff stuck its cloaca in Galabras's tum-tum, as you would call it.
That was a rough day of recording.
Yeah.
Yep. I had an original idea for the finale, just doing a just mentioning that you see this horrible look, half griff, half Galabras fly by and go, kill me.
I remember the griff babies flying away, and they had glasses on. Skid's glasses.
We're getting deeper into the year, like as we're recording this, deeper into the summer, and it's just getting hotter and hotter in the apartment, and more and more unpleasant. And then you pull this on me, and I was just like,
you were not having it.
No.
It's like, I think the things you cared least for in our entire run was this and the nugs in the book 5.
I did not care for the nugs.
Those were two. Didn't care for those.
Yep.
We're nearing the end here. Book one. There's Uskrot's armor, classic.
Cool.
And then
that's what Sir Will was wearing in the final fight against Volstis.
Really? Wow. Oh, that's right. So. That's very cool.
Caster level 5th.
Crazy.
It had been upgraded by that point. I had cast magics onto it to upgrade it. But yes, it was that set of armor.
You're telling me to keep it moving, and now you got.
I'm trying to go. I'm skipping 3 pages ahead. That's why I said sorry.
Well, I just was showing the note that you found to Screed from Grenzeldeck, and then there's that final fight against Screed.
And I never knew that his name was Screed Gorwillow.
Neither did I.
Yeah.
Never knew that. Yep. That's pretty poor roleplay on your part.
He was an alchemist. Well, what does he say? Before kill you, you should know my great grandfather's name.
Come from a long line of Gorwillows.
What did you say? He was an alchemist. I remember reading this and being like, I don't want to play a fucking alchemist. But that's old Screed. Moving on to book two, perhaps the best book of our entire adventure. Arguably, a lot of people say that what went down in book two is what solidified them for this.
Well, come on. Like, river journey, boat shit, bunch of cool and fun NPCs. The characters get fleshed out. Then you got a swamp, and you've got... a druidic ruin and an extra planar adventure and then a fort thing. I mean, it has everything, that book. Everything. So good on Larry Wilhelm. Thank you, Larry. Tip of the cap.
Oh, Larry. The Hill Giant's Pledge. And there's Grenzeldeck looking amazing. I think Baron still has one of her axes.
I do. Do you remember when Baron had like a huge crossbow, one of Grenzeldeck's axes? Oh, and part of why I took it was because I really got off on being withholding to Joe. I was just like so happy that his characters couldn't use them. So I had 8 weapons.
He got so much joy out of it.
Here's
who's the guy getting stabbed in the face?
Those were a couple of giants that you fought when you are inside of Red Lake Fort, I believe. There's 2 hill giants. There's a man and a woman inside of the fort. Your encounter with them wasn't as memorable as this, but it's a great shot. Moving on, you'll see an image of the iconic Inquisitor and Harsk fighting River Drakes.
That looks cool as hell.
Aboard the Chelish Devil. The Chelish Devil, by the way, not in the book. I made that up on the spot because... You guys and were like, what's going on? I'm like, oh, there's a stained glass window of Cheliax, and there's a devil, the Chelish Devil. And here's
it doesn't
the map.
Have a name at all in the book?
No, there's no name. It's just Blood Tusk's Keelboat.
That's crazy.
That's great. That's some of your best work.
I wish I had named it something that didn't use Paizo's IP, because then I'd make a t-shirt out of it.
I didn't care for that, like... I guess it was 2 years still later. It had to be 2 years still. And when I was like, why did you use Chelish Devil if you made it up?
In the spot. I should have called it Steve's Sweet Boat. I'd wear a shirt that said Steve's Sweet Boat.
Steve's Sweet go. Keel.
Problem solved. Problem solved. Now you're making sure
Sweet Keel. Look at that boat. Does that bring back memories? That's when maps are easy to draw.
Yeah, I remember those maps really well.
My God, did we have fun.
Oh, my God, because that's also the freaking... All right, I won't skip ahead. Come on.
Well, there's Rag. There's Captain Rag Bloodtusk.
Looking beefy.
Another character that had a life so far beyond what he was written for. Obviously, we see him, his situation at the end. But, like, you may forget, like, that scene with him and Dalgrith after Dalgrith's death. So he touched a lot of people's lives.
Yeah.
And then this son of a gun, old Coxswain Halvricks, the no-pants flute dance.
She was so mean.
She really was. Really mean.
Yeah, she was very mean.
I remember... being in character as her and saying something to you, and you kind of got mad. I was like, I said, you wrote Tabo, you piece of shit. And you were like, what?
It triggered my innate Irish Catholic biology.
Saw it in your face.
That was just like the tone of voice and the way it was said. It's like a math problem. You're just like, oh, that equals Irish rage for no reason. You're just like, push.
Yeah, Coxswain. I'll always call her Coxswain. And then here is the the map of your journey to Red Lake Fork, as I said very often. I don't know why. But you start at A, you go up the Kestrel, and then it turns here, and you go through Ghostlight Marsh all the way to Red Lake 4. But look at all the other areas. Like, there's Urgir to the north. There's Freedom Town, where the assassins came from and where Malira came from. There's Vigil, which also came up.
But it wasn't featured in the AP, to my memory. We never went there.
No, you never went to Vigil.
I think it's cool, too. I think it's like in like Galarian lore. I think it's a cool town.
Yeah, when I was trying to figure out the ending, where it would all go down, I was looking at possibly having it. Basically, the Storm Tyrant is heading to Urgir to recruit the orcs of Urgir. That's where he's going. That's where he's driving the castle. Mm-hmm. So he was going in that direction. So when I was trying to decide where it was going to crash, I thought about having it crash like right where you guys
into
were.
Rags boat.
Yeah, or like I looked at Vigil and stuff, and I'm like, oh, that's a little too on the nose. It just happens to crash right on like a mile away from Red Lake Fort. So I thought the area to the south of that would be fun. But I did look at Vigil because Vigil is where Tarbifon escaped, I think.
I think it wasn't it like built to watch over?
To watch over him. It's a vigil.
Yeah, that's what it was, yeah. And so in Tyrant's Grasp, the AP that follows his like resurrection, I think Vigil is heavily featured. Actually, it is, and I can't say because I don't want to spoil it for somebody, but some shit goes down in Vigil. Anyways, that's the map there. That brings me back. There's Malira. I think you guys had figured out that someone was a stowaway at that point.
And she, with that bow, came closer than anyone for the rest of the adventure to killing Baron.
Yes.
She was the one that almost killed Baron.
Wow.
No one else came close.
Well, her companion was a real rough customer to deal with, too, right?
The snake, right?
Chokehold. Was it his name, Chokehold?
Chokehold.
Yeah.
Yeah, it says it right there.
Yeah, Chokehold. CR-.
Well, she was a ranger, right? And was she a ranger? I thought she had like favorite enemy dwarf or
something. She might have been a slave. You know, yeah, she was a ranger.
Ranger sorcerer. Ranger with one sorcerer level.
Yeah, and there were traps set up down there as well. It was great. I glossed over the Grian because there's no picture of the Grian, but obviously
she does. She has favorite enemy dwarves. Like, that's why. That's why.
So bad. That's why that was so hard.
Face redistribution, favorite enemy dwarves plus two, humans plus four.
Wow.
Yeah, plus when that's a good mix, ranger, sorcerer.
Yeah.
And then here are the maps that are included in like the journey there. So you have the hungry crocodiles, the drake's nest, because remember you fought the little river drakes and you had to go fight the mama drake. And then the A Knight in Need when you met Calrian Blix.
Yes.
That is the one that I forgot to poison the orc's weapons.
Yeah.
That's and then right. The Marrowdam.
Oh, I remember that map too. I remember that map really well with the little outside.
For he's a very good.
You also had a really
he's
good
a jolly
name
good
for that
Marrow.
Episode.
Yes.
He's a jolly good Marrow.
No, but there was another one.
There's another map?
No, there was another episode. It was like the next episode. The title is great about the dam. It's like, frankly, my dear, I just blew a dam.
Well, that was another great one, too, because there was a run there. There was one episode. Do you remember, Joe, that we did? And I was like, that's the worst episode we've ever recorded. It happened right around the boat. I was listening. I was like, I wish we could re-record that. There was an episode we didn't like, but then it was followed up by like three of our best episodes. But that was the Tog of War and the whole thing with Lork talking about his backstory. And then
that's the first time, like, and I just came up with that on the fly talking this. I was just trying to intimidate him.
Right.
And I was like, I killed a kid once or a guy in my crew who tried to blah, blah, blah. Made it up to try to intimidate. And then that became such a huge thing. I mean, it was part of like Feyraz's character backstory. It's crazy.
Yeah, and then I think Galabras did Zone of Truth, and then there was the whole thing with him and Gajnak. And it was that moment when the arrow, he like looked back to you and smiled, and then the fucking arrow right in the head.
Yeah.
Killed her.
Yeah, episode 38, I believe.
Takes drink of truly.
If memory serves.
To prove point.
Truly mango Thai chili.
There's Calran Blix right there, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Look at her.
And then
she looks more like Gwendolyn Christie there.
She does look like Gwendolyn Christie.
My former Facebook friend who liked a picture of my cat once.
We should have thrown her into
Skid has truly won the Game of Thrones.
I know. I won the Game
you
of Thrones.
You win or you die, and that's right. Here he stands.
She liked a picture of my cat and a joke that I made about John Kerry once, and that was
what was the joke about John Kerry?
Oh no, it wasn't about John Kerry. It was about the election in 2008. It's not important. I don't want to raise any hackles. And she liked it. So.
I did. I when I was going back through this, I was like, oh, don't forget to put Calran Blix into the finale. And I forgot. But in my headcanon, she was a part of the Knights of Highbury. But she obviously became very important.
Yeah, she should have been like a general of the Knights of
Highbury. Yeah, I just forgot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Look at the next page with Tark Sinchkin.
I remember loving this fight so much.
Yeah. Yeah. What that was
another one
encounter.
That almost killed Baron. That means it was very, very close.
Very close. But also,
I believe Gormley saved his life.
Wait, is this the guy that crawled up? He came out of the water onto the ship?
Yeah, they like hijacked the boat.
They like Navy SEALed us. And Gormley, like the reason you love this encounter so much is because Gormley was the MVP. You did like multiple AOE crowd control things that made that fight winnable.
And
I remember being like, Gormley was the VIP here.
She was also up in the crow's nest. Yeah. So I felt, I don't think I took a single point of damage. And I was just like, stabilized. Crowd control. I was just standing up there just casting shit on all these guys.
Visually, I think this is the closest to what I imagined. And that battle was so well realized, too. I remember you in that crow's nest right now directing traffic in this kind of brutal melee below. And like Joe said, the Navy SEALs coming out of the water. Great battle.
Didn't your gun get... This was the first time your gun...
It exploded.
Yeah,
exploded.
It blew up. Another shot.
Mm-hmm. It was so desperate. Lork, I feel like you were... maybe you drew a fumble, like you were moving half speed or could only move. You were really, really slow. I don't remember what it was. Maybe there was a net on you or something, but Baron.
I think there were nets being thrown around.
That makes sense. That tracks for me.
It's a hell of a fight. Speaking of Baron, here's Baron's first love interest. Shit covered Ingrid Hildnar.
I've got a feeling, baby. Oh, man.
I'm Umlo.
So I went back to that whole scene for the tease. It didn't make the final edit, but it was in the original draft of the tease. And it's just straight up Grant walking up and be like, hey, honey, darling, it's me, Umlo. And her going, huh?
You're not Umlo.
It's the first thing she says. And then there's just a pause. And I'm like, well, that plan worked out. Well, I mean, it just became the funniest thing. I mean, we ragged on Grant so bad. And we barely knew him. I mean, of course, we were 40 sessions in at that point. But like, you know, that was when we were so mean to Grant and being like, your idea was dumb. That's when we knew he was really part of the crew.
That was the funny thing. I remember I was driving in my car in Toledo, Ohio, and I was listening to the next episode. And Troy's recap of Grant's plan is, for me, the most I've laughed listening to an episode.
Oh, I got to listen back.
It's so fucking funny. He's just like, I wish I could remember verbatim, but he's just like, I'm Umlo. There's my plan. So it's like, no, wait. It's like, she's running away. We don't want her to let her get away, but we want to keep her alive. I know. I'll shoot her with a gun.
This is why I started trying to specialize in shit talking bosses and giving eulogies to your dead characters, all three of you. Okay, because I couldn't screw those up.
Oh. I'll fire a gun at her chest. Yeah, and she almost decapitated Lork.
Oh, that was her real introduction.
That was the crit card.
Was that a card?
It was a card.
Okay.
It was a card.
Which I just brought back from the office today.
I remember Troy pulling it out. I got to go back and re-listen. But I remember you pulling it out and just being like looking at me and not saying anything for a second.
Was it a DC 18 fortitude save or something crazy like that? Maybe not 18. That seems really high.
My memory is that I rolled a natural 17. That's just the memory. Yeah. I'll have to go back and relook at it. But decapitated. I was like,
isn't it funny you remember some of the just some of the rolls you make? All
yeah, that is really funny.
We could skip the next one real quick. It's just the fight against the Hydra after you had finished the Vault of Thorns and were coming back. I think that's actually a not a random encounter, but it's easily skippable. But that ended up being a really hard fight against the Hydra.
Yeah, because Hydras are a bastard.
Yeah.
They are tough.
I mean, it wasn't as hard as I thought it would be, though, given that it was a Hydra. I thought we were really screwed, but we weren't.
This is one of the times I wanted, this photo is reminding me, there were times early in the adventure I questioned our party makeup a lot, and I wanted, a berserker or, a straight-ahead, melee kind of specialist, because Lork was kind of a switch hitter, and Gel was a healer, and Gormley was, doing...
Dead.
Saves your life.
Was so dead. Thank you, Gormley. Thank you.
Dead by the time of this battle.
Not the last time Matthew would save my life.
Look at this map here. This is all the Ghostlight Marsh encounters.
Wow.
But it's also the entire Vault of Thorns. I can't believe. Do you know how much story of ours is on this one page?
This little corner of the page is like the whole
thing. There's a map for Ingerhild, the insane dwarf. Right?
Yeah. Ingerhild, the whole druidic circle.
The Moss Moon.
The Will-O-Wisps.
Moss Moon, the remnant and of the council. Entire vault.
I would have bet $1 million the Vault of Thorn was its own page.
Yeah. It is the smallest, most compact map that winds around within itself, and it has two levels on one map. Because J2 there is the bridge, but J3 is where you found Della, and where that's where Galabras was buried underground. That's where Lork walked, or as Silvertusk touched the tree to bring Della through time. That's where we see the man in the floppy hat at the end of our adventure. It all happens in that room where Barry Connick Jr. was found, in that room.
It's kind of funny because the way the map is drawn, it looks kind of more like a part of the marsh than I imagined it. I remember entering through there into this fey land and thinking I was transported to another dimension.
You were, and this often happens, not to denigrate Paizo's maps, but they don't change them to it'll be the water is murky and dark and the water will look crystal blue.
Got it.
So they don't match sometimes. It might be a deadline thing. We need that map. And then the contrast flavor text thing, comes
It's hard to see murky water next to sand.
The way it's described is it's exotic. Every flower in the world is there, and it just looks green.
Those little bastards that started attacking us as soon as we walked in. What are they called? The Tinder
Twigjacks.
Twigjacks.
Yeah,
they blinded Baron.
I thought it was the lurkers in light.
Yeah, the lurkers in light that were flying. They blinded Baron.
That's right.
The first profession fisherman over the bridge. How important that became to our story as well. Moving along, we just see Gripwort here. This is the marsh giant. Yep, this is the one that was basically guarding. So basically, I think a Wigga had. Wigga's coven or Iwiga herself had recruited Gripwort to guard the entrance to the Vault of Thorns. Yeah. It was a great fight. And again, one of the early giant fights because you hadn't fought a lot of giants.
Mm-hmm.
I believe this is before we went in. I think it's right outside. Gormley also so near death.
Yeah, that's what he just said. Yeah. Before. The marsh giant almost killed me. Remember when we looked at the Vitruvian marsh giant? I was like, that's
right. Yeah. I forgot that's where it was. I completely forgot. Yeah, I don't remember that encounter.
All right, so that's Bestiary 2. So that wasn't built just for this, but very, very cool giant. And the only reason I included this next image is so you could see Gorham's Thorn as the way it was drawn.
Oh, cool.
Something
it looks like a He-Man sword, kind of.
Yeah. It does kind of look like the cartoon sword.
And then Bramble Blight. God, that thing sucked.
That almost killed Baron, too. Oh, the biggest heel turn or trickaroo when you guys thought I was just being a dick, having Iwiga stay outside the room. And then the turn. Oh, God. And the cheesesteaks trap, which was right down the walkway to get into the Bramble Bright room.
Yeah.
And that fight.
And the birth of cannon fodder.
Episode 55. Right here.
We had to explain why we are actually still friends. And after that,
that episode almost ended the podcast.
Yep.
It was so unbearably hot and sweaty. None of us had eaten.
It was my. It was the hardest edit up until that point. I remember I had to edit so much out because you guys were so angry, rightfully so, that like it was unusable footage. But like I was using shitty headphones. I need to go do a director's cut of that again because I think you can like hear the edits. There was. I mean, I took a picture of it and I sent it to you guys. I'm like, here it is, the most edited episode of the Glass Cannon podcast.
Yeah, I remember. You did that several times in the past 7 years.
Yeah. Sometimes I get very lonely when I edit. Here's Red Lake Fort. We're not going to go through all of it, but
wow.
Cool fort.
Can we go through the middle buildings?
You know I included the middle buildings.
Okay.
Just look at the fort, and obviously K8 down the bottom there. If we go full screen, that's where Galabras and the Gar met, and where we first see Brander in real time. And then somewhere around maybe K32 is where you meet Droja.
This looks like a real bastard to prep. That's a lot of rooms,
And I was hand drawing all of it.
Yeah, that's crazy. On two levels.
Dude. Yeah, it was the last book that I hand drew. Is once we got into Minho's Valley, I was like, "We're going to Rule 20. I can't do it anymore."
Wow!
But he was a bastard. This was one of many maps that I looked at as I was reading the book. I mean, like, what have I gotten myself into? There's Umlo with his beard all and hair cut off, which was the most disrespectful thing you could do to a dwarf. In my mind, I always thought you guys would get captured by that raiding party and thrown in the bear pits with Umlo. And the book kind of, they don't assume you do that, but that's how they write it. Because they write it linear, think you're going to go that way. And you guys killed that party and weren't thrown into the bear pit. You instead came around and snuck through the grate. Great Expectations. And
we crawled through a lot of poo there.
You
right?
did crawl through a lot of poo, and you went right to the second floor and all around. And eventually,
and
you
I believe Lork rolled a natural 20 in my memory on the grate, on the ripping the grate out. Yeah.
You just went in a different way.
Crawled through 2 miles of shit.
There's Droja, another oracle that became very important. This was a turning point in, I think, the network was that Droja episode.
Yeah.
At least for me.
Agreed.
Because there was a lot of times when I was talking to, I mean, how many times did I tell you, Joe? I was like, I don't know if I want to do this podcast anymore. I was like,
yeah,
I want to go do stand-up. I want to be acting. I want to be doing other stuff. And you being like, well, you got something here.
Why don't you nobody's just, watching any of your other stuff.
Why don't you just...
People love this.
Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of back and forth.
And I remember you saying that the miss... was it?
Misconnections
was largely written in your head on the walk to my apartment that day.
Like, yeah,
a lot of those scenes you would just like thought about as you walked over and then just did it. And mm-hmm. it became such an iconic episode.
Yeah, it was like my response to you. It was like, all right, I'll do this.
And Droja would look into the mists and see all of our futures, right, through the oracular. I think that really influenced how I ended up writing Adriel with the flames and the seeing. And, like, I liked having, like, a hook there. That was really neat. I don't know if that's in the adventure or if you added that, but it was really cool.
I think there is – she's got the pot with the mists and it says, like – and she looks into the mists for things. And then I just made it a thing for her. But it was cool to throw out there that Lork had a child, because one of the things that I knew was like the myths aren't always true. So even when I said you have a trueborn son, I think, I knew that it was going to be a daughter.
Okay.
Or like I said, you have a trueborn child. Did I say son?
Yeah, I believe you didn't say son.
But you assumed son. I'm pretty sure you assumed son. And in my head, I knew even back then, like, it's going to be a daughter.
What about the episode made you change your mind? Just how cool it was?
No, I knew it was going to be a daughter. I just wanted...
No, I mean, in general, you said you went into the preposition saying you were talking about stand-up and all these other things. What about going through that and that experience and that story that you told made you change your mind?
Joe actually convinced me. He was like, you've got an opportunity here to do something, and there's people that are really into this. Oh. You should take this opportunity. It was Joe really... he talked me into it. I was on the ledge. I was like, because I'm too OCD, I couldn't stop doing it. But I was just at this point where I was like, I don't know if I want to put all my energy into this. Yeah. We've all had these low points throughout the show, and that was for me right around the 50s. Like, I was happy with it, but I was like, this is taking up so much of my time, and now I'm not doing what I really want to be doing. And I had a long talk with Joe, and it was Misconnections was sort of my response to that. I was like, all right, let's really try this.
Right, because I mean, that was a chance for you to like write a TV show. That's what that was. That was not a Pathfinder session in the traditional sense. You were writing a TV show, and it set a tone that changed the entire rest of the campaign.
And the trajectory of my life.
There were more scenes. There were more narrative, deep shit than we ever did before. That's the entrance of Brander into the larger narrative.
Yeah.
It's when you take Giant Slayer and make it your own, is episode 62, right?
61.
61.
Next up is General Kargik. Obviously, he became a very important figure. And it's written in there, it's like, you can befriend Kargik, and Kargik will give you inside information on Grenzeldeck, because he wants you to go in and take out Grenzeldeck, but then he's going to turn on you, because this is his fort now. So it kind of all worked out perfectly, but of course, Lork, natural fives, the charge. There's one of those
I'm looking at his stat block. He's not, at least the top of it, he's not wildly undefeatable.
No.
He'd be hard, but he's not.
He's not someone a fifth level character should face in single combat. He's definitely defeatable.
One on one, though, at that level, that's tough.
Yeah. It is kind of crazy.
He's CR6.
It is kind of crazy to think that someone of CR6 and level 7 would be a general as far as we've come now to like level 13, you know what I mean?
No, I mean, I think that it's pretty legit because
really?
I think sometimes
13 is like god level and 7 is like very advanced.
I think sometimes we don't appreciate how rare. That's the whole reason behind Dahlgrith, because I hate the idea of a bunch of level 15 people running around a world. You can't have that. It has to be so rare. So when I brought in Dahlgrith,
one level 15 person could slaughter every like regular citizen on the planet.
Exactly. So it's basically like when I brought in Dahlgrith, the whole thing was just he has to be legendary. You know what I mean? Like if he's going to be coming in at 12th level or 13th, whatever he was, he's like he has to be world renowned, basically.
Yeah.
Next up is just one of those Ogrekins that you guys fought. Remember you cast Silence?
Ooh. Yeah, that was up in the bell tower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then finally, the middle buildings. The middle buildings, which we talked about on a cannon fodder, but an early cannon fodder, if you didn't listen to that, they had this creature inside, Mubs, who I thought was really cool. I was really excited to play him. I can't remember what exactly he did. He was a hill giant who had a cleaver.
He looks like right out of Dark Souls.
Yeah, he looks
like that cook Bloodborne. In Dark Souls.
Bloodborne.
And Bloodborne.
There was a dirty old latrine, and then there was like haunts and shit. There was cannibalistic urges. Oh. So if you go into the larder, there's a haunt that if you fail the haunt, you are afflicted with an overwhelming hunger for flesh, drooling uncontrollably. Those affected are compelled to attack the nearest creature. So basically, it would have turned you against your allies. You want to kill them and eat them. I was like, this is going to be great radio. But it never happened. There was that moment, though, as you guys were escaping, you were like, let's go through the middle buildings. Yeah. And I just very said, oh, you kind of have this urge, blah, blah, blah. But there was no fight. I wasn't going to be like, fight Mubs. But those were the middle buildings, Mubs and Cannibalistic Urges in the latrine. Next up is Fabian Blix. Obviously, also very important. Calrian tells you about Fabian. Oh, my uncle, blah, blah, blah. She obviously didn't know that her uncle's ghost was haunting this. The only reason I included this is if you go to the next page, you see the Glory Medallion. And it was the first thing that I changed in the adventure to suit the characters. Because it was originally a Medal of Iomidae, but I wanted to make it for Skid, so I made it a Medal of Desna.
Right. That's where I got to sing Shonen Knight for the first time.
Mm.
Was in that episode.
That's so funny. You gave it to him and then you just took him out of the entire show two episodes later.
Yeah.
And that medallion would be amazing for Sir Will, who came in like three episodes later.
I didn't take him out. He failed to save.
I remember thinking and talking with Skid after that episode, and like, didn't it increase your number of channels or something and do other awesome things when you had it? Like, yeah. I just remember like talking.
It turns a one on a channel roll into a six.
And I was right. like,
any
I was
one
like,
you roll.
This any is a
one.
This is a game changer, dude.
Yeah.
Game changer. And then
it's amazing. It's a 5,000 gold point. Is it a next slot item? That is an awesome item. Yeah,
that's a really cool. Any cleric or channeler, like, that's incredible. Really cool.
Mm-hmm. There's the note exchange between Grenzeldeck and Volstis. Obviously very cool. I think I handed those out as well. And then I can just very quickly here go through the end. There's that sorcerer, Pappy Guttercrunch.
Who had a headband of Alarm Charisma, right?
Yeah, I think you're right, because he was there as a sorcerer.
Holy shit. Sorry. I got to back this up for a second. Let's say Gel stays alive. Let's say this item stays in the adventure. Did you reread this?
No.
Right out of the book. In addition, once per day, the bearer can expend uses of his channel energy to dispel darkness of lower than ninth level.
That would have been
a spell lower than ninth level. So,
to
like,
be clear, easily. You know what else we could have used to dispel that darkness? Dispel magic.
Right. All right, we'll get to that. That may have worked
as well. We might have to cut that for time.
now you're worried about time.
All right, next up is Grenzeldeck's bodyguard. Arguably,
the manticores are here too. That's the manticores.
Right? Oh my god, that's another scene. Right. Yeah.
Oh, God, gotta go so back good. To that.
The manticores, the Grenzeldeck's bodyguard's very cool. And then you see Iwiga in the back matter here. Iwiga, and then followed by Grenzeldeck. Grenzeldeck, at the end of the day, was the first time we didn't fight the boss at the end. You know, Grenzeldeck happened, and then it was like, well, now we got to go just tell Kargik we killed her. And then Kargik became the boss.
Right.
And then Brander kind of became the boss.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. But that fight was hard. Remember, there was a haunt in there, too, that was making her unfathomably sad, and it made you guys sad.
Curse of Melancholy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Something like that, right?
Yeah.
And Iwiga became a huge part of this as well. Obviously, we talked very quickly in the Vault of Thorns, but then I brought Iwiga back because you didn't kill her, and it's written in the adventure. If you read the campaign rule, it's like, she comes back, basically. And a good place to have her come back is outside the tomb of Nargrim Steelhand, and that's where she came back as Metra. Remember? Come here.
Oh, yeah.
Daughter, hug me. And Matthew... just for show, for
like
show's
idiot.
For show's sake, it was just a great moment. He went right in. Come here, fucking turn on her.
I believe I also dropped my scimitar, and I think I watched. Yeah. I think I watched you have an orgasm live on a podcast.
You're a good man, Matthew. I don't care what Grant says. Let's move on to book three. There it is, Forge of the Giant God, and there is Orathash in the flesh with his hammer. In the background, we see Ezrin taking on an Etten.
I just want to say I really like almost everything about stone giants. I just really dig stone giants. They have such that cool Easter Island look.
Yeah.
They are intimidating and kind of evil, but they're also intelligent and like, and they seem
they're not
undefeatable because they're made of stone. Sorry. They are neutral. I thought they were.
Yeah, they're neutral.
I thought they were neutral evil. Oh. Interesting.
Yeah, most stone giants are neutral.
But that's where competency of our opponent began to creep in, right? I think I was thinking about this as I was writing things for the final episodes of like listening to him talk was like, oh God, these people aren't just moving around without a plan, which is what it felt like sometimes. Urathash was a real leader.
Yeah, we started to move out because Grenzeldeck was a disaster. And that's when we really started to move into like bosses that were bosses. It felt like,
That first image here is just a close up of the Ettins, and then you see the forge in Myndirhall's Cathedral.
Very cool.
Yeah,
looks smaller than in my imagination. It was much bigger.
Yeah. Well, if you were there, it would seem really big. You, Matthew.
I'm sorry, is this in focus?
featured in the epilogues of 326, there's a scene at that forge, and it's big, and all these people are using it and everything. And it became such a pivotal part of our story.
It is, and honestly, when you see the map, it's much larger than how it's drawn here. There's just a fight against, who the hell was this guy? You know what? You fought this guy when we were in Cape Cod.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, the Cyclops. Killed Metra.
Yes.
Yeah.
We were talking the other day, like, what happened in Cape Cod? You definitely fought this guy. It was a night recording right around when we were doing those giveaways on Facebook. You fought that Cyclops.
Because Della was invisible, and she went down. And for a minute, it was like, oh, no one can find her. No one can heal her.
Right.
Yes,
that's right.
Yes, Joe. Yes.
Right. Was this? That's right.
Yes.
What?
It's okay. He's a celebrity.
No. Oh, I forgot about that. Oh, my God. No, I was going to say, is this The Hills Have Eye?
I think it is. Yeah, The Hills Have Eye.
Yeah, good title.
I was proud of that one. Here's Nargrim Steel Tomb. You know, Nargrim Steelhand's tomb. You forget that this was a part of Book 3. This was your opening to Book 3. Yeah. And then you went to Minderhall's Valley and it lasted 100 episodes.
Well, the other thing was, remember, the real start to Book 3 is dealing with Gelf. It's all us. It's all not in the book.
It's right.
All
it's Sir Will coming in, Lork leaving, Nestor coming in.
There was so much narrative at the start of that before you even get to the tomb. So when I think of the tomb, I think of the first time Sir Will is in combat. And this is Lexington and the Stairs. Yeah. He's introduced.
Now you see the stairs. Here. You see the tomb shaft. How could he make it down that shaft?
Oh, God.
That was a cool tomb, though. It was a cool dungeon. Like
That's working the shaft. That's that episode.
Working the shaft. I forgot about that.
Remember the tomb had like a view window? A window on the floor you could look down into the tomb? And Lockmore had like tricked it where you guys were chasing around. You split the party and came around, and Ingrahil died because you split the party.
Right.
And you fought these things. Next page here is Stillgrit, the mother of spiders.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the Ettercaps and this?
Oh. Yep. Gross.
Gross.
Yep. Is she standing on poo?
Yep.
Okay.
No, I don't know. I think it's just a rock. We need something here. Put a rock.
Spider house.
Just a very small picture of Nargrim's steel hand here on the next page.
Did it done on the in chat says adding in a character like Nestor and making it work is what solidified the GCP as the GOAT. It was just very interesting. Not too many people can pull off a real evil asshole in the party.
People ask me when people ask me about this. Like I always say, the key for me is to find a goal that parallels the goal of the good party. And make that more important than whatever else kind of mischief that the evil character would make otherwise. That's all you need. You know, just making them want to do the right thing for the wrong reason. That's the trick.
It certainly worked for our show. Who knew Nargrim Steelhand would become so important at the end to have it change hands so many times.
I've never seen it before, and I thought that it was way bigger than that.
Well, you gotta imagine
pictured
it.
I pictured it as like way up the forearm.
If you look at the art for Lockmore, it does look very different.
Yeah, look at the next page. Look at Lockmore. You see it start to climb up his arm.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's like liquid metal. It just kind of goes down the arm when you...
Joe, I think you got to say the name of the weapon he's holding. Do you remember saying that name a lot?
Hot spiat!
Hot spiat!
Yeah. You got a crit with hot spiat?
I forgot about hot spiat.
You know what's so funny is like Lockmore, the betrayer. Lockmore betrayed Nargrim in a a very different way, but a similar kind of theme in the way that Nestor would betray Umlo, who was also a Nargrim kin. But that was a cool
They're
moment.
All suckers.
That was a cool moment. Kin. And then, of course, we see Stria Crown and Shinnerman's Fortune, another little town and side adventure that became so important.
And this is the Orym Vorax, too, is around here, right?
Right before you get to Shinnerman's Fortune is when you fight the Orym Vorax outside where you find Abria.
Right.
Because the giants...
To that point,
were coming.
The single hardest and most dangerous creature of the entire AP.
The Orym Vorax, yeah.
It felt like
and
we...
was never defeated, right?
No.
Or didn't it run away?
Did it run away?
I think it ran away. We ran, or it ran. One of the
My memory of it is that we didn't kill it.
We didn't kill it.
That thing was so awful.
I think it was after kind of traveling to Skirgard, but it used to feel like traveling from place to place was just incredibly dangerous all the time for us. Like, we could run into, like, anything totally unrelated to our adventure, and it would just, like, survival of the fittest kill us.
Yeah, like random encounters on the way.
So, you know what's funny? A lot of the finale kind of just came to me over the past weeks. I don't even want to say months, but we'll say months, but months and weeks leading up to it. But when you showed so much interest in Aubrey and it became your rallying cry, mm-hmm. I knew in book three that Aubrey as an adult was going to be in the finale. That was one thing great. That I've known all along. I didn't know what form it would take. I just knew, like, we have to see Aubrey as an adult, because if Baron doesn't survive, it's going to have so much meaning. If Baron does survive, it's going to have so much meaning. So that story has always been in my head. When you latched onto that, that's one thing I knew was going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Moving along here, we have Minderhall's Valley. Now, I remember seeing this. This was another one of those moments in my prep. I was like, how the fuck am I going to do this? There aren't even maps. They give you like four maps for A through Z. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this.
And look at the scale.
Yeah.
It's eight miles
for an inch. Nickel.
They get all the way to Z. They're mapping out locations with the alphabet, and they get all the way to Z. Is this the first time I remember you coming in and just being like, you guys could go anywhere, I could prepare anything? Or is that Red Lake Fort?
No.
Felt like sandboxy. This was the moment.
Well, I mean, we talked about this earlier. Like, every AP has their own thing. You know what this thing was? Sandbox. Every book was a sandbox. Mm-hmm. Every single book. I feel like I can do sandboxes now, but it's miserable. And this one was really tough.
This is the most Grand Theft Auto of, like, all.
The good thing is, like, once you go A, B, C, D, right? And E is where those... what were those guys called? I can't remember. Veds? They were drunk. The Veds, yes.
Oh, the Veds.
E is where the Veds were, right? Once you got to there, then I knew, okay, which way are you going to? If you go K, great. Then I'll do K, L, M. I could just start prepping those. But if you go south, it's going to be this. But at a certain point, once you get to the eastern portion of the valley, everything goes out the window. And you guys did almost every single encounter in Minderhall's Valley. Almost every. There were some you didn't do, but not many. And we had, God, did we have fun?
It was fun.
I remember doing this just like completely and utterly losing any sense of direction whatsoever. You'd be like, all right, you want to go south or you want to go north or you want to go west? And I'd be like, I have no earthly idea.
I would send you copies of this map. I remember off air us being like, what? Why don't you just tell us where you want us to go? Because, like, we don't care, Troy. We'll go anywhere. And you were like, we can't do it. It can't be done. It sullies the purity of the game. You must choose.
Choose.
The Mike Krzyzewski of tabletop role-playing.
V, if you look at V, that is the barrier that you fought. I think two tigers and a couple of giants that leads into the valley. Z is Minderhall's Cathedral. But Q is where you fought the undead marsh giant wights. And I think M is one of the cathedral. Well, look at the next map here. You see, like, all the different portions. There was the sunken temple when you guys had to go underground.
Was what we were... Were we suffering? We had the giant fleas at that point, did we? Or no, we didn't get those yet.
Oh, no, you got those when you got into the cathedral and you killed those hill giants in their sleep, and then you got fleas.
Right. And then we were just like, because we went underwater for like hours at a time. We were like, well, surely this will take care of the fleas. But we looked it up and it's just like, no, like, fleas can survive.
Fleas can survive.
Completely submerged for like 2 days.
They're really, really, really tiny cockroaches. They live through everything.
The dark passage is the area where you fought Fungfar and found Fungfar. That was all in there.
What kind of giant was Fungfar?
I can't remember what the hell
rock
he
was.
He ate rocks.
I think he was just a troll. I think he was some kind of a troll.
He was a troll.
He was a rock troll.
Yeah, that's why I said rock giant. Yeah, he ate rocks and shit.
Yeah. Next up is Gristlecrack. Oh, by the way, Nestor almost died in there. Do you remember that? When you were crawling away.
Yep.
You drank a potion around a corner, and I think it was arguable in the rules if you could have even done it, and you had that look in your eye that was just like, don't even fucking do
it. Don't play with me, like, valley.
You know what? Go ahead. Just drink the potion.
Yeah, drink the potion.
Because also at that point, I think you could not have been higher, Skid, on Nestor. You just like... You loved playing Nestor. You were in the zone. You were playing him so well. And for him to go down in this random-ass encounter.
Do you know how bad that would have sucked if he had died then?
Yeah.
And it was. I mean, think about the rest of the story.
It was close.
Yeah.
Next up is Gristlecrack. This was a cool one for me. I don't know if other people appreciated it much, but like you guys killed and defeated her, and then I knew I was going to have her come back as the one that chopped off Lork's feet. So it was fun to see a character that was already dead do something horrible, and you didn't know that when you fought her.
That to me is always one of my favorite ending of the fights, because that was the Highbury charge into her skull when she was prone.
You impaled her.
Yes, that's right.
How it ended the fight.
That's right. That's right.
I can always picture that. Like, yes, I will have it.
And what kind of giant was
Taiga giant?
But that wasn't
as was Sir Dasa.
Was that one of the drawings we looked at the beginning, or was it
no.
in there?
No. A taiga is more, it's not a type of giant. I think it's like a bloodline. You could be a taiga fire giant, I think. I might be misspeaking, but I think taiga is like an extra thing. You have a blood in you that gives you special powers. It tends to turn your skin this color.
I think you might be thinking of rune giants, or maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, I remember reading about it because you fought two of them or in the adventure, maybe even three of them.
I mean, on D20, they have a stat block for a taiga giant. It's a CR12 creature. It's a straight up creature.
We fought one in the castle, didn't we?
Yeah, Sir Dasa, one of his lieutenants. I can't remember what I'm thinking.
It's like a biome, like some of the other giant species. So I think it makes sense.
Yeah, well, there she is. And then there's the marsh giant white that you fought. They were pretty unimpressive, but I remember you guys being scared at the time because you hadn't fought undead. Yeah. There's the Drake's Bane horn. And the only reason I included this is because that was that great find where you were like, grab the bag, fill it up, and you were fighting the fucking dragons.
Yeah.
And you got the horn.
That's episode 90. It's a Sir Will title. And it's good. I don't remember what it is. It's a play on Will. Big Willy style.
Big Willy style.
Oh, yes, because
He used Uscroft's armor to grow.
Yeah,
The chat, by the way, is lighting up. Big Willy style.
Yeah, and I was playing Umlo that episode. That's just a highlight episode for me, because he's just like, shove everything in there! Umlo is the one saying that. Like, take all this shit!
Right. Yeah, we had very different flavors of Umlo.
We did. Yes.
The many lives of Umlo. I mean, this is amazing.
Skid, you were playing the long game on Umlo.
I know. I was just trying to keep him out of danger as much as I possibly could.
That was Skid's only thing. Like, I knew that he wanted Nestor to kill Umlo, but then you do these episodes and I'm like, he is just doing everything he can to make sure he has this moment with Umlo.
I do total defense.
I'm going to hide like everything.
And you guys didn't have any idea. Yeah. You're just like, Skid doesn't want to play Umlo today.
I remember a very specific fight. There was a fight with a bunch of like birds outside.
It was after he got to the cave through Fungfar and he went and hid in the cave.
He ran back into the cave.
And he prayed.
Oh my God.
Exactly.
And he prayed. That's right. Oh,
and you guys were like, Skid is a genius.
Skid talking about praying for the tease.
Here's a question, a trivia question. Troy, you can't answer.
Okay.
It's for the rest of you. Do you know who was controlling Umlo when he died in actual combat?
Yeah.
Oh. Huh.
Matthew.
It was you.
It was me.
Yeah.
Because I remember
I was on Umlo that day, and he died. And Skid must have been like, O'Brien, you fucking piece of shit.
I was so furious / heartbroken. And like Troy had to calm me down because he knew why I was so upset. He was just like, let's just get through this. Don't worry.
And oh god, I was so, because it was so close to when I knew this was going to happen. I was so angry, I couldn't believe it.
You know, we're jumping a little ahead. I was going to say we filmed this in we recorded this in Philly at an Airbnb during a very early PAX, maybe the first PAX Unplugged, and we recorded multiple episodes that weekend, maybe two, maybe three, and we recorded that one, and we were set to record one more the next day before we left, and so we recorded that one, and Skid was devastated. And I was just like, I'm sorry, man. This is going to be so good for the story. It screws up your story. I'm sorry, but...
Well, no, that one we recorded in your apartment. The one where he came back and Nestor got to do what he had planning on doing. That was in Philly.
Oh, that was in Philly?
That was in Philly, yeah.
Oh, I thought
that
it
was
happened
definitely in Philly.
I thought it all happened over the same weekend. Because
No.
Died in the cathedral.
I was sitting on your couch. Like, I remember, exactly where I was sitting.
Della died in Philly. But Umlo,
but Umlo died in the cathedral fight.
No. He died to slag giants. Was it the same fight as the Urathash fight? No, the slag giant and Etena fight happened before the Urathash fight.
So then it was right before we left for Philly. Yeah.
That's what happened. But when the long and short of it was, I knew Skid was upset, and I was trying to. I had kind of moved on from it, but then I was thinking, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna do this instead because it's gonna give Skid his moment and it's gonna make everything better and then also establish Brander as an even greater power. And it was just a win-win-win. Win. It was
really,
such a gift
that dovetailed so nicely into it. Accomplished multiple goals with one decision.
Can I ask a question to Skid? I remember because you said it when you killed Umlo, the gutter trash comment, and I called you that. And the way I was playing Umlo was him not enjoying your bullshit as an evil character and pushing back against that. Had you already, prior to me calling you gutter trash, made that decision to want to kill him?
No. That was what made me decide.
You killed Umlo for real.
Aaron killed him. Hashtag Grant killed Umlo.
Yeah.
Hashtag Grant killed Umlo chat. Hashtag Grant killed Umlo.
And I killed Razzmatazz. I have a high body count in that book. Let's be honest here.
You do.
The backstory of that is I was playing a lot of Street Fighter 3 at the time. And Dudley is a gentleman boxer in the game, and he's British. And he would call people gutter trash when he would beat them up.
Get out of here.
So you know how Ryu's Hadouken. He'd be like, gutter trash. And then he'd throw Rhodes at his opponents. So that was in my head when I was like, what, you take everything from me? I remember that speech. I remember because we were treating Umlo like a commodity rather than a human at that point.
We weren't respecting Umlo very much.
Yeah, I think was actively trying to kill him. But I didn't mean it.
You just didn't want to play him every four episodes.
I enjoyed playing, but I just he doesn't give a fuck. Actually, I was going to say, so Della died in that Airbnb in Philly, but something else died in that Airbnb in Philly that was incredibly important for the development of the show. Do you remember what it was?
No.
Your microphone?
Troy's microphone. The lavalier.
The lav mic.
Yeah. For 70, No, now we're at 120 for all those episodes.
Wow.
You used the lav, and it died. And I still remember to this day, and this shit happens all the time, Nish. All the time. Grant's like, it's going to be even better. We're going to put you on one of these. You're going to sound a lot better. And Troy goes, not an option.
Worst idea I've ever heard. How am I supposed to do the maps working around this nonsense?
And then he does it, and he's like, Grant, I sound a lot better. Why wasn't I doing this before, Grant?
Turning on Grant. Why were we doing this for the last 40 episodes?
Exactly. I sound like I'm underwater for the first 120 episodes of the series.
What I love, this happens in small ways too. Troy came out to me when he wanted to buy a new TV, and he was like, tell me what TV to buy, Grant. I need your recommendation. He bought it, and then he talked as if I had never spoken to him to everyone. He was like, talking, this is the best TV. I found it myself.
Do your research. Do your research.
I say this.
I didn't mind.
The time
to be around Troy is to be in a constant state of SME. Because you say things to him, and he just goes, what are you, a fucking idiot? And he just tells you all the reasons you're dumb and you're stupid and you should never speak again. And then, a few hours later, he has your idea as if it's his own.
Awful. Yeah, he changes, one small detail.
A tiny bit.
And he says, so I was thinking about this when I was on the shitter. And you're like,
I said this 3 months ago.
See, this is the thing. It's like Joe and my wife, they used to talk about this. You do have like a little scam. You're like, don't say anything. You just have to convince him that it's his idea.
Yeah.
And then he'll do it. But if you say you like it and want to do it, he won't want to do it.
Right. I remember getting artwork from like a designer, and I would just be like, I really like this, but the best way to get it executed and out in front of the niche is to say, I hate it. Because that's how Troy's like barometer works. He's like, if Joe likes something, it's garbage. And if he says he doesn't like it, this is the fastest way to get it. Exactly.
I'm just saving time.
I'm not going to name names, but I had a script out to that I was trying to sell, and
to Christopher Walken.
To Christopher
Walken. He didn't want to name names, but it was Christopher Walken. Yeah. I'm sorry.
And I met with the exec, and he was like, listen, I love this, which is what they always say. And he was like, I think the only way for us to make it is if I tell my boss that I hate it. And I was like, okay, it sounds like it's going to backfire. And he was like, no, it works every time. And then he called me the next day. Yeah, he didn't go for it. he believed me.
Yeah, and you should have responded, by the way, it sounds like you have an unhealthy relationship with your boss. You should think about working for someone else.
Who tastes more aligns with your own.
Right, exactly.
I'm just going to zip through a bunch of slides here so we can get through, because I know we're running late. But next up was just Adarumi's Chapel and the Shrine of Fandara. That's where you fought the Beneos, those things that exploded and had worms inside.
We have art of that. We have the Atkins did like a scene from that.
That was early today. When we had the escape artist here on Patreon. And then Adarumi's Chapel, I can't remember what you fought there, but that was another one of those like artifacts you had to catch. Next up, I said tigers. Those were Smilodons.
Yep.
And
saber-toothed tiger.
Oh, yeah.
This is at the end when you see Sophia Keswick come through. She's coming through this area right here. When you first see that carriage in the finale, it's right here, but now there's no Smilodons and giants.
Oh, wow, yeah.
and then there's Mama Dung. Remember, there was like a dung cart as you guys were coming into the valley. You're like, how the hell are we going to get past a million giants? One of the options was to sneak in the dung cart that would drive you right to the back where the hill giants were.
Right.
And then next up is Kragmold. He was like the guy, one of the guys running the fighting pits that you fought. I think you fought.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then next up is Rotter Bloodfreckle. This is where you fought. She was like a butcher.
That was in the tent. That was
butcher outside the tent. You end up doing, and then you went and fought a witch or something. Not a witch, but like some sort of ghost. Remember? It was right before you got into the cathedral, but it was right around that time.
I'm having a real problem here with my... I feel like I'm like a time traveler, and I have screwed up my understanding of the linear course of events.
Well, you do drink.
I do drink. Why do I remember... Why do I remember Razzmatazz? And Razzmatazz in a tent outside the cathedral, and Razzmatazz dying in the cathedral.
That's true. It's all true. Razzmatazz came in 100, and then he was with the party. He never really contributed to fights. He was just kind of there.
But
and
I don't understand.
Because we had the kind of side story was Pembroke and Ferrazza and Razzmatazz getting to the cathedral.
Right.
That was a side story.
That was a side story.
That was 100, was getting them to the cathedral.
A Gaiden, as they say in parts of the world.
Lork, Pembroke, Ferrazza, and Razzmatazz are in the cages at the top. You guys rescue them.
Not Ferrazza was never captured.
You were not captured, but the others were.
Ferrazza the Uncaptured, what a name.
But
So we had Pembroke, because here's my problem, is that Nestor leaves after the whole encounter.
Yeah. Right.
So Pembroke is in book three outside the cathedral, but doesn't fight Orathash.
No, he does. Remember, he bursts in through the doors and was running down the center aisle.
Oh,
but it took him forever.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, I don't remember. Yeah. So you had two characters in that fight.
Most of you did. You know, I had two characters active.
I'm trying. Ferrazza was there. I don't remember that.
Ferrazza burst in with a bunch of with a crowd of eagles that she summoned.
So this is what I wanted to mention is as we're getting into the cathedral and approaching like this final fight, I was going back through old clips for the tease, and when we send Razzmatazz in to die, is when Troy does the I got it for you, of course.
because we're friends. Like, we're going to be friends forever. And like, it's so funny because we all know he's going at a certain death. And you just keep layering it on, Troy, over and over and over, how like how much he loves Pembroke and how much like his loyalty is. You're my best friend, and we're gonna and we're all going like, oh God. Like, yeah. I mean, that was so
Skid hated
so
him. But like he became lovable.
Well, I think it was too, for me, I always played Pembroke like he had almost sort of a sociopathic kind of side to him with creatures that he either summoned or charmed. So like he was good, like basically, but he had this sort of disconnect from like creatures that he like were under his control.
I love that because if you're as well learned and you understand how summoning works, like Pembroke must have, you would have to be detached in some way.
Yeah.
Well, like a doctor. And also, Skid, you say in that episode when we're making this like this emotional guttural response to Troy's like hilarious play against, you know, the emotional play, we're all just like, oh God, this is so horrible. And you, Skid, as the player, are just like, all right, just stop for a second and let's remember that red caps are so among evil. The most vile, horrific creatures in all of Pathfinder lore.
Their really caps funny. Are red because they dip them in baby blood. Like, that's why.
We're going to be friends forever. Forever. Poor Rev.
I'm sorry. Continue.
He had a good cutscene.
Great run.
Yeah, I mean, this we can zip through a lot of these just to get to book four, but there was that two-headed troll that you fought in the nave of the cathedral. Yeah. And then there's the Cathedral of Minderhall. Look at this shit.
Wow, look at that.
That is awesome.
I remember this map very well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when you look at that image now, like, it actually is, it's not, it looks a lot bigger to you.
You loaded this into, this was not map. This was not drawn anymore, right?
Yeah, no, this was, we had to use Roll 20 because look at the size of it.
Yeah, because I remember someone climbing on top of the statue's shoulder and like, I think Nestor
was there. Nestor was doing that.
And I remember zooming in on the top of that head and wow, very cool.
Yeah, that bottom, the thing in the bottom left, if you go full screen, Grant, that's where Atena, the Forge Heart.
Yes,
where right. Where Atena was her like,
little room there.
Talking, and then Z13 is where you caught fleas. That's where the flea situation was. And then the beer hall up top, which
that's
became
our first frost giant.
The first frost giant when Will went across the table, that comes up in the finale as well. And this becomes a big image too in Will's epilogue, as now that table is full of knights. We move on and you see Farron. I love image of Farron. Another character that became so important.
I can see why you cast who you cast in that role.
Right. Was it Ruby Rose? Or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's one thing about this adventure. Like, there were so few NPCs. It was so much combat and so much exploration. Like, anytime I had an NPC, I was like, I must latch onto them for dear life and wring the life out of them. Otherwise, there's just not going to be a lot of role play. And Farron, I mean, look at what a role she took on right until the end. She's going to get some good residuals when that finale re-airs.
Yeah. It took me forever to trust Farron.
Yeah. Of course. Look at her. She's a huge giant. And
there's
also
something also about how you played, and there was some mystical stuff about it. And like, maybe that's just my own like BS detector around mystical stuff, like that real life that affected how I had treated the character. Even though Baron was talking about Torag all the time, like there was just something off. But
yeah, I felt super suspicious for the longest time too.
You were waiting for the turn and look at next page
here. We've been burned so many times at that point.
So many times.
It was, you know.
If you look at the next page, you see Atena, her master, did turn on you. So like, why would you believe that her student wouldn't do the same exact thing? They worship an evil deity. Tenno was a cool character. So this was the Oracle I got to play with here, and it was an Oracle that I knew was going to turn on you. That was a cool fight too. The next page is the maps of the tower. This also became a big part of our adventure because the dragon fight atop is where you first meet Noxzemara.
And that was the whole demon's blood thing too came to the head.
with
yeah, Sir Will almost killed Della.
Yep. Della.
The spike tent, finding Lork in the cage with his feet cut off at the end of 99. Earth Ash's bedroom. The next page, another great image of Earth Ash.
Very, very stony there.
Yeah.
I love the look of the stone giants.
Yeah.
They're very cool.
And then next up is old Noxzemara. You know, wow. There's a world where Noxzemara joins you in the final fight against Volstis. But I think I even said this. It was like once things turned out the way they did, I just thought it would be such a more emotional moment to have Noxzemara's head come flying at you. Because it's like, we're about to fight somebody that ripped Noxzemara's head off.
Yeah.
Do you think a lot of GMs use Noxzemara as a deus ex machina to like save the battle at the last moment if they don't want the characters to lose?
Or just to even the odds. Like if Volstis has more lieutenants, you kind of have to put Noxzemara in there or you'd be TPK in a couple rounds. But I felt like it was going to be the fight that it was. I thought some of you would die. I thought if I threw Noxzemara and it was going to tip the scales too far the other way. And I was more interested in the emotional impact of having Noxzemara's head come flying. Because now you're like, even if we win, what are we going to do with the orb?
Right.
But I did feel bad because Noxzemara ended up being a cool dragon character that had a life beyond.
It's cool to ally. It's cool to become an ally with an evil aligned dragon.
Yeah. There's another picture of Atena and then another picture of Earth Ash. I'm saying Noxzemara. This is actually the red dragon you fought atop the tower.
Yeah, I was about to say. I thought we hadn't Noxzemara talked to Noxzemara doesn't come from
book four.
Yeah.
We'll see her in a second. But there's book four, Ice Tomb of the Giant Queen.
Cool. Oh, look at that hat.
That's some hat.
Wow. Yeah. Skirkatla looking amazing. You know, we can kind of bip and bop through this really quickly. I just like showing Jesper Ehring's artwork because he is phenomenal.
Well, this is also another huge transition in the history of the show because you have Della going down. Not too long after this, Sir Will leaves because you have Lork coming back with feet. And I'm not sure how far in he becomes an elf, but it's not that far. But you have
so we go to Bloodsworn Vale. Yeah, you go to Bloodsworn Vale.
Oh, and Nestor leaves. So now all of a sudden, the party is Lork, Baron, Pembroke, Feyraza. Like overnight, almost, yeah. It feels like.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like, it was like change. A bunch of like actors' contracts ran out in seasons.
Like it's like we get to that, like the middle seasons of ER.
Exactly.
Well, you know,
where's George Clooney?
At the risk of Anatomy without Sandra Oh, you know?
At the risk of tooting our own horn, you know, they always say that Cheers was the only show that, like, replaced two of their main actors and never missed a beat. People do this all the time. News Radio, all these shows, like, replace actors, and it never quite caught. We constantly were getting rid of fan favorite characters and bringing in new ones and never losing a step. And people point to those last, the turn of the end of those the Earth Ash fight into the beginning of the book as some of their favorite episodes of the show. Those last three episodes of book three.
And behind the scenes in our lives, that's when things are really changing with the support of the Naish and Patreon.
Yeah. Yes.
That's when money really starts coming in and we have a studio and we're not doing this in our apartment. I mean, the Orthash fight is like one of the first things that happens in the new studio. And
it does. That's right.
Or yeah. I mean, it's like right. It's a right then. It is right.
Yeah.
Then,
Orthash was in Philly, but then,
and then it's like, the next episode. It's like one of the first ones in the new studio. So like as the entire party was changing, our lives were changing in how we did this podcast. We didn't have to – I used to carry a mic boom and everything in my backpack and walk to Troy's apartment with a mixing board and set it up and break it down every time and then walk it home. We're going to have our sound equipment in one room that we just – when we walk in, it's set up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember.
And guess what? We didn't get any faster at recording or starting to record. No, we just spent that 30 minutes bullshitting instead of actually plugging in equipment.
I used to drive to Joe's apartment and it was when I first got my car, and I would pull my like case out and like have my little stand ready, and I remember Joe would be like running before he would record a lot of times, so he'd like come in from a run and he'd be like, nice car, man, I'm thinking about buying one too. And I was like, you're just gonna buy the CRV, don't worry about it. And I remember him saying to me, I want the RAV4 though. And then he got a CRV just like me.
Grant. Yeah. And he never gave you credit, just like
no,
I did.
No, just like you.
I was like, well, I did my research. But yeah.
The transition between these books, it happens between all of them. Like, there's nothing written. And I felt like you really needed something for all of these. Now, I didn't know, like, we're going to go to Bloodsport and Vale and reincarnate Lork. It just was like, we need something here. And between and four and five, before. It's like, Kragadan. I look at the map. I'm like, what's here? Kragadan. What is that? Oh, it's a Dwarven Citadel. Oh, it would be fun if they stop in Kragadan and something happens. And then you get Mary Beardchen and, yes.
Those
and
then the Kragadan
Dwarves. But it was cool to have this because it's like, what are we going to do about Lork? Are you going to play Sir Will, or are you going to bring back Lork? And I felt like, let's bring back Lork. It's time. But we got to get his feet back. And this is when Matthew and I had our conversation. Like, what if? You came up with the idea.
We
Matthew,
talked about it like, in Philly. And like, yeah. Joe had stepped out or That's something. Right. And I was like,
he went outside to his car, and you were like, what if I kill him?
If I kill him.
And this is Matthew. By the way, this is always Matthew's idea. What if I just fucking kill him? And then that's the end of the discussion. I'm like, well, what happens next? He's like, that's all I got.
Who else would I want to kill?
I never knew that. Knew that you were cooking that up in
Philly. It's just Joe's characters. Yeah. You went outside. We had just finished. And you, Matthew, brought that up.
Because I had looked up reincarnate.
Ooh, that could be cool. I was like, I was
shocked by that. That was awesome. Wasn't that also, and that was, I'll never forget this. I'll never forget that moment, of course, Matthew, but I'll also never forget Skid being like, hello, little sapling. Like, yes. Being the tree. That was so brilliant. And you played Orthosh, Grant, in that. Orphos in that scene. That was awesome. Right. Challenging him again. Everything about Gorum being like,
Well, we knew.
You're a failure.
I knew where it had to end.
Oh.
I knew Feyreza was going to go, you didn't know, obviously. And I was like, well, I don't want this to just be a me, Matthew, and Joe episode. We got to have something for Grant and Skid, too. But if Skid plays a wise old tree, and what if we bring Orphos back, one of the best characters that had such a short run?
Someone just brought up the whole thing. I was laughing about this with Samantha the other day. Was the Cat Benatar, like, as a spy? Riff that we went on.
Oh yeah,
I was laughing in Kadira, so hard.
Kadira yeah. Spy. Yeah.
You have beautiful taste, madam.
Oh, that's right.
Madam, you have such a beautiful taste.
Oh man, dying laughing.
You got Troy on that one.
Skid he couldn't speak. He was because it was so absurd. It was just this giant jaguar with just a veil. And it wasn't even like sounded human at all. Like,
beautiful taste. What would you like, Matt?
She was like, to browse our wares.
What beautiful taste, Matt.
I totally forgot about that until this moment.
Samantha brought it up a couple of days ago. I was just laughing so hard. Forgot all about that.
Oh, you have a beautiful taste, madam.
It was like the chicken boo thing from Animaniacs. That was like
so funny. Next page here just shows you fighting one of these badass frost giants. I mean, I just really, let's zip through a little bit here to get you to the Skirgard map. There's Skirkatla, like the
Christmas
bust.
Card?
We're going to go to the Christmas card. But there's the bust of Skirkatla. And then, this is what I want to show you very quickly, the outrage points.
I was looking at this. Yeah.
This was a system that I had to keep track of, depending on like how you sabotage the camp. If you did it well, you would get outrage points. If you did it poorly, you would get or vice versa, sabotage points and outrage points. And like at a certain point you got boons the better you did, and at a certain point if you did bad things you got penalties. They'd put out more guards, or they'd give all the frost giants potions of dark vision to be able to have guards going at night. But you guys did pretty well. It was just this little sheet that I was keeping track of. And
who
at a
knew
certain
we would be good at antagonizing you.
Yeah, no, you guys, you were naturals.
Did this system persist into, like, because we were also, I felt like Ash Peak and being in the mountain in the next book was, like, similar in a way? Did it Did this carry over, or was this just unique?
No, it was just up until you entered the tomb. Like, at a certain point, once you the camp disbands, and then all that's left is to go into the tomb. And so you
succeeded. How many points did we get?
I want to say you got 17 is what I have. I remember writing it on a piece of paper.
So, and that's because we played poorly? Is that what I'm understanding?
No, you played well. I put up the outrage points, but there's another table that's sabotage points. Like if you get 20 outrage points, if you really just do horrible, Skirkotla comes to you and is like, come here!
Yeah.
Next page just shows you a bust of Noxzemara.
How do you... Sorry, it says first line. If the PCs ally with Noxzemara, how the fuck do you not... What? Are you like, go fuck yourself, and then she just burns you all alive? She's a CR-14 creature. Like, what happens if you don't ally with
her? It says this in every single creature, friend or foe. It's like, if they make an alliance with so-and-so. And Noxzemara is the type of creature where, like, you could easily fight her. Let me think of another example. Renfall. Renfall is an example of a creature that you may fight. Yeah. I may have gone soft on the diplomacy or, like, because I really want... There was no other NPCs. I was like, I really want Renfall to be an NPC. And by the way, he is my favorite NPC in the entire adventure. Yeah. I was thinking about this. Like, if I had to pick one, it's Renfall. My favorite to play.
Yeah, I agree.
He was a great voice.
And people love Razzmatazz. Renfall's better.
Yep.
He's objectively better than
Tom Exposition. A lot of fun. But, like, I didn't want to play Tom anymore. But, like, Renfall to me, and he had such a great arc. You know, you had no one else to talk to. Well, that's why I made Thune such a big deal in Book 5, because there was no one else.
Yeah.
Because
he has the arc and he has the character development and he's also funny. Like he's got all the comedy.
He's absurd, but he also has plot related.
Yes. Yes.
Razzmatazz is like Urkel. He was like, did I do that? Can I hold the baby?
Yeah. And he's silly and he's fun.
Renfall was Stefan Debonair. Someone you want to spend your life with.
The thing also about Razzmatazz, like his funniest moments are his appearance. Cause you guys thought like, oh, he controlled him and that was the end. You won the fight. And he's like, well, I should introduce myself. And his death. You don't remember any of the stuff in the middle. Can I hold the baby? Sure. But like Renfall was constantly a part of your adventure and a very important part.
995! 995! Sorcerer!
He was like a senile old man. But also like, and he had such great... To me, he represented... everything that castle once was. Like, we saw it as this, like, Transylvania, right? This giant villain's home. Renfall, to me, made it a place that was once great and worth saving. Like, it all funneled through him. It really, he was the most important thing to me in Book 6. He really was.
Well, that's why I loved I'm giving myself a hand job here, but, like, I love at the end when you hear Renfall's real voice. And now it's... You know, there's this otherworldly part of him, but then you get that conversation between him and Baron. I like that we were able to like humanize him at the end. Anyways, what I was going to say is there's a world where you fight Renfall and he's an enemy. So fighting Noxzemara is possible as well. It's just they have to throw it in there.
Oh yeah, we'll let you know, and then just not.
did that inform your decision to make him somewhat unhelpful, like throughout some of his silliness and stuff? That he could be our enemy? Like, you were thinking, like, we had to, like, work it out with him, and so he was
Renfall or Noxzemara?
Renfall.
Renfall. No, I just... he's written in as, like, when they're in this room, they might see an image of Renfall. There's actually a room inside of the tower outside in the crater where you touch something of Renfall's and you see an apparition of Renfall. He appears and then he just floats up towards the castle and you hear harp music the whole time. You guys didn't see that. Your first time seeing him was going past that force wall into the room that he was killed in. But I don't know. I was just glad to have him. Next page shows you Skirgard. This isn't the Welcome to Skirgard Christmas card. This is the bird's eye view of the camp. Another one. It's just like, okay, sandbox, where are you going to go? What are you going to do? Rainfarg is that wolf. The adventure assumes that you'll get there pretty soon. It was one of the last things you did.
Yeah.
Here are the maps that they provide you with the exception of the longhouse where you fought Gregonor, Hersir Gregonor. But these
I remember the grist mill.
Yeah, one of these I don't think you even went into. Maybe the tannery. I can't remember.
So what happened in the brewery? Something happened in the brewery.
Merple, the fox.
On the catwalks.
You meet his familiar, Merple, the fox.
I love Merple.
That's right, Merple.
I can't remember what Merple did, but it was funny.
Merple was depressed.
Quiet voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We killed Merple his master.
Yeah.
He was really sad. He was really moody.
Yeah.
The next page is Kupanarth. This was three arms. I fucked it up too when I did the insect spies because I think I said like two arms. Anyways, this was who they were referring to.
Right.
Here's another image of that Magrunda, that's the frost giant we see at the beginning of the book. And these are, I don't even remember, I just included these because like I don't even remember who these were.
I don't
know. Aaron Gunn.
Never Rokinir.
This was the brewer, I think. He was a witch. He was a
yes. Okay.
A witch. You guys wiped him out really quick.
Oh, I remember the longhouse.
That's the longhouse, yeah.
Wait, the fox was actually named Merple?
His name was Merple. I didn't make that up, yeah. I think I told you guys. You were like, what's your name? Merple. So, and you guys laughed. It's in the book, Merple.
So here's what I remember about the longhouse. L5. I remember this room with the large bed. First of all, isn't there something under the rug? Or we thought there was something under the rug, and there's something actually there. There's
a secret door in the back.
Hold on. I'm going to get to that. So I think we were looking for something there, whatever it was. But then we find that secret door. We find it from the inside. We rush out that secret door. For some reason, we are rushing, and we run directly into the Wicker Man fight.
Yep.
That is my memory.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
It did happen. Yeah, you were trying to chase Greganor. You thought he was going that way.
Oh, yes. Okay, right.
And we chased him directly into the Wicker Man fight. And I was like, we were not supposed to do this. And this is somebody's going to die. And Baron should have died.
That's one of those ones. Like, if you go back and check the tape and do the math, somebody should have died that day. It might have been Baron.
Well, I think we got the rules wrong.
We got the rules wrong.
The Pembroke's save, or whatever, not saving throw, but. The way he saved Baron.
Oh, the teleportation, really the dimension door or something.
There was an extra action in there or something, so he took an extra move.
Call me Zach Morris because I'm saved by the bell. Screw you guys.
Baron lives.
The longhouse was cool. There's Greganor. Awesome art. I feel like Jesper Egering did this as well. I included this picture of Thrymir's beard because, Grant, you made Thrymir's beard important. For books 5 and 6, it came in.
A huge thing.
Every once in a while. Zipping along here, there's Debellos. This was the cleric of Urgothoa.
You
know, it brought in Urgothoa. I wanted to bring in Urgothoa worship since it was such a big part of this book. And then it became a part of like Brander's line and what happened to Highbury and Sir Will's brothers. You could see like how someone could like fall for someone like Debellos. Which is what happened to Bartholomew. And then there is one of the undead giants you fight inside of Skirkatla's tomb. This is the witch during...
Hold on a second. Where do we lose Lork?
You lost Lork against the tomb giant.
Where's the tomb giant?
He's coming.
Oh, he was inside the tomb?
He was in the Urgothoa, which I showed earlier when I showed those four maps. Grant, if you go back to 117.
Do you have an image of that tomb giant?
Yeah. So, Grant, go to 117 and see the map with the fly on the bottom, Temple of Urgothoa.
Yeah.
Lork died in P3.
The way you described, I can remember you describing like some image or something on the ground in that Temple of Urgothoa, and seeing it in this map now is... Before we had air conditioning in the new studio.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah. Lork died upstairs in 1,000 degrees.
1,000 degrees.
Now go to 139, Grant, and you'll see the giant that killed Sir Will.
Oh, there's the scythe. Oh, he looks
great. I know Sir Will, Lork, bro.
Yeah.
He looks dignified.
Yeah.
And deadly.
He looks like the guy in the seventh seal. Death. He looks like death.
Yeah.
I'm questioning the fact that he's not wearing shoes.
He doesn't need them.
Yeah.
He doesn't need them. He's dead. There's the Borelu, by the way. Remember him?
Oh, God, the Borelu.
The Borelu was back matter that I just added for that transition between going from Skelt to Skirgard. I felt like, we need something else here. So I added the Borello. But the Borello was just in back matter for book four. All right, zip back up to slide 127, Grant. This is just real quick. That's the witch or the hag that was in charge of the group that was holding Nim-Nim and Shael.
Oh, right.
And the carts, the cold riders and the woolly rhinoceros.
What's the name? It's hard to read. Birkvilder.
She was some kind of a hag. And then the next map is the map of Skirkatla's tomb. And to me, this is one of my favorite, if not my most favorite map in the entire adventure, because it is a classic. It feels like D&D when I played it as a kid.
Yeah, I have like Against the Giants 1-3 that I've been reading. It's in the bathroom. It's my bathroom reading.
Didn't I get that for you?
You did.
Yeah.
So like that's, well, you should be honored that that's where I'm keeping
it's
it.
It's made it to your bath.
But it is like, it's so much like, reading through it, you realize like how much of an inspiration it was for so much of Giant Slayer. Mm-hmm. And this is a great like example. Like it just feels so much like some of those like big, the maps like in that old like D&D adventure. It's awesome.
It's a great, great map. T3 is where the TPK almost was with the Remoras. T3.
If you look
bottom right.
I remember walking into T6 and seeing the underground tunnel underneath it.
Yeah.
And Troy saying, it's an error in the map. It's weird. It's like a mistake they made. And I was just like, you're so full of shit. Like, well, you just, there's something under here. We got to figure it out. And I'm trying to like not metagame, but he's like, yeah, it was weird. It's like a typo with the
map. I can't remember what I said. Like, come on, Paizo. Click that shit off. I don't want that there.
Right.
Look at the map now. Like, how am I supposed to hide that shit?
I know you can hide it. And that's the tunnel that we end up going into, then pop up in T10, right? We pop up into that room with all the acid pools and...
What are we talking about? Didn't... No, I guess Lork died in Urgothoas then. I thought he died in T10, but no. The creature that you fought...
He was dead before the tomb.
Yeah, the creature you fought in T10 had one of the chain links of Skirkatla's armor.
Yes.
That's what it was. But it was a creature. It might have been another tomb giant. That's why I'm thinking, like, it's the creature that killed Lork, but it wasn't. But T7 is where Forebears died against the Doulahan.
Yes.
When you came back through. Just a fucking great map. There is the Doulahan there on the next page, the Decapitant Lord.
Dude, he's CR14?
Yeah.
Wow.
Jeez. That's cool.
That's really high. That's a really high level.
He's got a +1 keen lance with 3 attacks, crits 19 to 20 times 3 crit, +3 sonic. and of course his ranged attack is he can throw his head.
I didn't think that you could keen anything that wasn't a slashing weapon. I don't know why I thought that. I thought that that was, well, I'm sure they always get it right. Though, Adam would tell us of Order of the Amber Die if they got it wrong. He'll write Paizo and be like, you know, you can't have a keen. And they'll be like, oh, shit. Well, don't tell anybody.
Oh, yeah, it was. It was a tomb giant that was in that room. If you look, Nefandros. Because the next page has the Gluttoner, which is another thing you fought. Because there was all these undead abominations. All the Urgothoa worshippers were, like, raising dead.
Oh, yeah.
But if you look, Nefandros, he was the one that had the chain link from Skirkatla's armor. There were two tomb giants. One killed Lork, and the other was this guy that was building abominations. Remember Anthrim Rhymebeard, the Revenant?
Yes. Or
the Devourer, mm-hmm. or whatever it was?
Yep.
And then there's Onenphexia, the Oracle of Book 4.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite names.
That's a great name.
And this is the end of this one. You fought that big fucking thing. Do you remember? I can't remember what that thing was called. It was like this undead thing with claws for arms and three heads.
Where did we fight that?
In the tomb. It was in the tomb. It wasn't the final fight.
Well, you'll
was...
have to be more specific than the tomb is very large, as you recall from the map.
Yeah, no, I don't remember.
Where did we fight that? I don't remember that thing at all.
It was in the tomb, like toward the end, but I can't remember.
Maybe it was in T10? Well, there was something in T14 to T19. What was on that door? There was like a, the door was like had like a
wait T14
T14 into like the main door into T19 had some sort of horrific spirit tied to it or something, or a, it was a haunt or a trap or a puzzle.
T14 had Arthrim Rhymebeard, the Devourer, the haunt. The haunt was the.
Like, did we just choose to not walk through the front door? I thought we, like, couldn't open the door.
You were thinking about it. I remember you guys were thinking about doing it, and you didn't. But if you did, it was a horrible, horrible haunt. Remember you were, like, you had to say the name of the character?
Yeah.
Oh, and right. That would have been
his name. Right. It was the Decapitant Lord. It was the guy whose head was cut off. Because basically, I think the Decapitant Lord like came to Skirkatla and was like, I want to be your fucking champion. And she was like, no. And she killed him and like tortured him and cut his head off. And so his spirit was serving her, but also trying to like find someone to save him. But until he could remember his name, he would always fight by her side as the Doulahan. So that was tied into the haunt.
Are you sure about that?
Yes.
What was the Decapitant Lord had something about the name. If he knew your name.
Yeah, if you knew your name, he got some crazy bonus. Or like
because he knew Baron's age. Because Baron was like, I'm Baron Redheart, and I'll fuck you up. And you, I remember you being like,
I'm Umlo.
Well, there was a curse we got in the tomb, too. Was that name related or no?
That was the geese.
Yeah, the geese.
The haunt, by the way, was called Dead and Forgotten. When the haunt is triggered, a ghostly apparition of a female frost giant steps out of the surface of the door and appears to slice through the target's neck with an axe. The target is affected by Finger of Death.
Right. So we never triggered that.
I feel like you never triggered that because you were like, I don't want to touch the door. But it was a DC 20 fortitude save. And if you fail, you die. If you pass.
The door really scared
something
us.
Really bad happens to.
I think you mentioned it. I think you talked about it after the fact on the show.
Man, yeah, I can't figure out what the hell this thing was. But there were Baycocks in that fight, too. It was the Baycocks, the Witchfires, and Skirkatla. To finish off the
that
was brutal.
Yep, killed two of you. Noxymara, there's a big shot of Noxymara.
Necrocraft, was that what it was? Someone,
yes, Necrocraft. Yeah, that's what it was.
Sphere. I know a few people said it.
And then there's Skirkatla, but the other pictures were way better. Moving on to book five, you know, book five was a weird time for us. I think that book five suffered from not being a great book, but I don't want to blame the book. I think it also came at a time when we were getting sick of playing Pathfinder. Would you agree?
No, not necessarily.
I think we just kind of generally
burned out. It was a combination, I think, of higher level play. Combined with we started doing a preposterous amount of work.
Yeah.
We couldn't keep up with what we were doing. And we basically dropped Giant Slayer as a priority in terms of storytelling.
Yeah, I guess
we
that's
just
true.
Did it out of like, we just went encounter to encounter to encounter because we were deep into ANA at that point. And ANA was successful, and we were like, we need to keep promising things on Patreon. We need to keep promising new content. And we start Emerald Spire right at book five. We start, Raiders of the Lost Continent is in book five. We're playing that, and we're all playing it, you know, playing everything. And we just got totally burnt. I mean, that's right into book five for me.
And then COVID.
And then COVID hit.
And COVID hits at the end of book five.
When it starts getting good, actually. Like, when it gets to the end is when we're starting to catch our stride, and then COVID hit. You know, I knew the limitations of the book, but, yeah, I think that we were overworked. I knew that, like, I just didn't have it in me to add to it because I was doing too much else. And so,
yeah, like let's look back. Let's look back for a second at book two, right in this show. And you show and you talk about how much you added to that, you know, that's not in there. Mm. That all stopped in book five. Yeah. You just did what was in the book. And it's because we had no time to do anything else. I remember like...
Well, the APs, like they're not built for radio. Like they're built for people to play. So like it definitely benefited from Troy like adding in a lot of that stuff.
Exactly. And that's why I don't feel necessarily like my position today, looking back, is not that book five was a weak book. I don't think that. I just assume that we were not giving our all to that book at that time. We just
I don't like using the excuse that the book wasn't good. I don't think there's any such thing. I've said that before. I think it's just...
I also just remember, enjoying encounters individually. I remember having a lot of fun because we were mashing. But it was just like, there were just like a lot of the same, right? It was
And I just... And it was another sandbox as well, which is not, you know, especially at that point, if we are burned out, like we just don't have the energy to kind of infuse it with more kind of character stuff, story stuff that's not in there to make it more interesting.
And this is something we were talking about the other day, is like I feel like I never really got to role play Metra really, because like how do you role play a god? Like we're so powerful, right? As characters. Right.
I had the same thing with Dalgrith. And I remember this, like I brought Dalgrith in as a world renowned monster hunter. And I specifically was like, I don't have any time to write flashbacks for him. And you know what? I don't need to. Like he is a one line flashback character. He's a famous monster hunter. That's all you need. You don't need any more. Think about the work that went into Lork, the work that went into Sir Will and their background. How many characters did I make up in Sir Will's backstory? You know what I mean? Like, Dalgrith has nothing. And that, to me, is a representation of how much other shit we were playing at that time. You just couldn't put the time into it.
Do you remember the plan we tried to hatch to do Dalgrith's backstory, though?
Oh my god! It would have been amazing. I'm still angry at Troy. I think he made a really bad creative decision to this day.
So we'll tell everyone what we're going to do.
Well, I'm not going to tell him exactly what we were going to do. I'm going to save that. But what we did was we pitched to Troy a full episode of Dalgrith's backstory that was completely written by Matthew and I, and played by, and where Matthew, where Troy would play a role in it and not know what was going to happen.
Right.
It was kind of a gift to Troy as like, the GM for
take a day off.
Session you don't have to prepare. And he said, that's never happening. And I'm never doing an episode that I don't have complete control of. And it deflated me completely.
That's exactly what you said.
It's exactly what you said.
That's what I said.
And it deflated me completely. And I was like, I'm never doing Dalgrith's backstory.
It was a bad idea that I'm glad I squashed. And
you didn't know the story. The story was good.
You didn't know the story.
I know the story. You told me the story. It's fine. It's a fine story. But it just, it wouldn't have saved book five. We needed to find other ways to save it. And, you know,
It would have possibly made Dalgrith something more than a joke that people just like shit on his dead body constantly in the castle in book six.
I stand by my decision, though I did feel bad that you guys were sad about it. I do think that book five holds up better in repeats, you know what I mean? It's like, nobody really watched
when you
Parks
can binge
and,
it.
Nobody watched Parks and Rec when it was on, but you binge it now. It's like, this fucking show is great. I think you'll feel that in book five. There's a lot of fun stuff in there. And then when we got into like, when I took Thune out of what it was written and I added Brander in, I think there's some interesting stuff there to the overall story, but it was just a lot of repetitive fire giant fights.
Sorry, just going back to this dog thing real quick. I want to say misconnection in chat says, you should have let Troy think it was his idea, Joe.
Yeah, that's where we failed.
That's where we went wrong. Yeah. We had an idea. That was the problem.
I remember the second you came up with that idea and looking at me, and at me, I didn't even need to hear the idea, and I was like, absolutely not.
This is what it's like, everybody.
What it's like. If you want the behind the scenes of why no one wants to do anything with Troy, this is why.
This is...
You didn't squash it completely right away. You kind of just evaded. And I remember Joe being like, have you written it yet? And I was like, no.
Somebody's got to be the bad guy. All right, let's move through this really quickly to get to book six. Again, a really cool image of the fire giants. And that's the thing is, like, it almost made me wish that book five was a stream, because the fire giants look so much cooler than we probably played them or explained them as you were fighting
them. Honestly, I've always been underwhelmed by the fire giants. I don't understand it. Like, early on, I created a fire giant as the ultimate enemy for Lork because in my imagination, they were horrifying.
They are.
And in, dude, all they do is just swing a greatsword.
They're like, fighters.
I don't understand. Why are they not constantly doing fire damage to you? Why are you not taking fire damage whenever you're around them? I don't get why they don't do fire constantly. I just never understood it.
I was underwhelmed as well, but they were easy to play because they were all pretty much fighters with just
They're fighters, swords. And if you get hit by them, it's very
Mona's
dangerous.
Here, by the way. Eric Mona's in the chat.
Eric Mona!
Hello.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, Eric.
All right, let's pip through this real quick. So the first thing I want to show you is the lower level maps that I was given. Look at this. So I had a roll 20 page for every single one of these maps. Now, the bottom right portion is like what the tunnel looks like. Grant, so if you go full screen, you see what the tunnel looks like. Like, there's no way you do all of these encounters. But I had all of the maps ready to go in case you did. Wow. And you skipped more than half of them. Because once you, if you go the route that finds Thune, it's assumed that Thune is like, I know the way. Come with me. So you were able to skip a ton of these, but there was some more fun variety in there. It wasn't all fire giants, but you got that eventually.
This
you got
is the book that I'm most looking forward to reading, just because I know we missed a lot of stuff in it.
Yeah, it would have varied things up a little bit, but
these maps are baffling to me. This is so humongous. Oh, my God.
I just deleted them recently out of Roll20. I should have kept them just to show you all because they were a real pain in the ass. But you see what...
Why did you delete them?
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to... We're not going to... What should we do on a rainy Saturday? Let's play A5.
Is it eating up your computer's hard drive?
Why do I need that map? I'm never going to use it.
In 5 years, someone is going to be like, I will pay you $20,000 cash to play A5, and now what are we going to do?
Troy's going to take 20 minutes to rebuild and put A5 back into Roll20.
Well, no, here's my issue is like the effort it took to delete it is more effort than to do nothing.
You're
it's
undervaluing
not taking
up
physical
the spite.
Space in your basement. I don't know why you're like have to get rid of it.
It wasn't in your garage.
I know. It's like I got to get my car in here. It's
I had like so many maps for book six. Like I don't want to scan through 20 mini dungeons to get to the map that I want because
the pages.
Yeah, like because on Roll 20, like you guys were going, let's go to the next floor of this Cloud Giant Castle, and like, oh, let's go back. Like, I didn't want to be like, oh, fuck, hold on, scan through all these maps.
You're right, because you weren't doing different Roll20 projects for each book. It was like the whole campaign.
Yeah, the whole campaign was one book.
Project.
I couldn't.
Right. But didn't you say you just deleted these the other day?
Well, recently. I mean, the past couple months.
You said it. You're making up an excuse that doesn't make any sense because it didn't happen when you said it.
It was like a year ago that I deleted them. I said, recently.
Okay. I just love the image of those maps taking up space in your garage. That's the funniest.
Look at this. Honey, look at these maps.
I can't get my car in here.
All right, well, shut up and look. Next page is Thune. Obviously, he became a huge part of the adventure. Dude. As written, he's just a doppelganger that gets captured. And
Thune's a beef boy.
He shows
he's
you the
a handsome orc.
He shows you the way through, and that's it. That's the end of Thune. And I'm so glad he became what he became because he was the only bastion of hope for this book for us, I thought, in terms of like giving something to you guys that brought you out of just combat.
He's the Renfall of book five.
He really is.
There was only one NPC and you did a great job of like making him hugely important.
Yeah, fleshing him
and
out.
I also really appreciate the idea, and it's something that I'll carry with me forever, that you really, that I never thought of quite, but the idea of making a doppelganger a mind-bendingly, like, interesting character, like, that lives for generations and can take different forms. They become an oracle of sorts just by their very nature.
Yeah.
They
the
can
wisdom
pass
that
through
they have
time
from, like,
and space
so long,
in a way that... Yeah, all because they can live these lives as other people, but they also deteriorate the more they change their form and stuff. It was really interesting delving into a doppelganger NPC as opposed to just doppelganger enemies. All they are is like a surprise FU. You know, you're like, oh, come on. And then usually that's all they're used.
That he was part of the Council of Thorns was really fun to be able to have this character who, like, as he transforms, you know, loses a piece of his past. So at the end, when he sees that statue, did you know him? No, I feel like I did. He really, maybe he doesn't remember him. You know what I mean? But there's a part of him that is drawn to that statue.
And that's how I played Silver Tusk. You know, I was always like, I don't want it to be an exact memory. You know, it's a feeling. It's a strange, I feel like I know this person, but I'm not sure. Like, it's interesting.
All right, so you
Kate
saw
Kate is here too, by the way. Kate is in the chat.
Kate.
Hi, Kate.
Be sure to check out Time for Chaos debuting tomorrow night.
I'm sorry. I haven't played with Kate in a while. I miss Kate.
Yeah, all right. Next page. So you saw those maps that I had loaded. Well, here's the next level, the grinder. Again, 8 more maps, and you see what that looks like. You guys did most of these, actually.
Yeah, I remember this.
I just want to zip through this. Next up is Rhaengar, who was the Magus. That I really wanted to fuck you guys up, but you were too strong. Do you remember you fought the fire giant?
I don't remember him at all.
I mean, the frost giant Magus. It was in the statue room where I added in that it was statues of all you mural. Right. And he said,
He had been like,
put down your weapons.
His confidence, he oozed confidence, that dude.
It
was one of those situations where Metra just, like, the dimension door just changed the whole fight. Move Baron away, and Baron just, like, blah, 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 blah.
My initial plan, and I think I've said this on a fodder, is, like, I knew you wouldn't, like, throw down your weapons, but I thought maybe this could end in a standstill where they win but don't kill you and take you to the fighting pits to face Skirkatla. This is the fight where I wanted that to happen. So when it didn't happen until the magma dragon fight, I was like, okay, well, this is the most dire situation they've been in. I'm going to use this as the thing that gets them to the Skirkatla fight, because it allows me to, one, bring back Nestor, and two, wrap up the Skirkatla storyline because she was still alive.
I have no idea what anyone in this band looks like, but he looks like he plays bassist for Avenged Sevenfold. Like, he looks like a heavy metal. Like,
yeah, he looks screw this guy. I mean, truly badass.
By the way, Eric Mona, yes, Billy Barty would be an incredible Tiny Murder Clown. It's great casting.
All right, I'm zipping through here these next slides. Next slide is just the one of the fire giant captains. Again, looks really cool and kind of sucks.
I remember I was pretty scared of those fights.
But yeah, I mean, again,
they didn't have the fact that they didn't have dark vision gave us such an unbelievable advantage against those guys. Yeah.
If they hit you, you're going to die. But if you don't get hit by them, you're going to be fine. And you guys found a way around avoiding those hits. The next image is that of a slag giant. So now you see what they look like. Obviously, you've seen Ferron's
not what I pictured
bust, but like this is what they look like.
Ropey arms, yo.
Yeah.
They're like the dwarves of the giant community. You know what I mean? They're forge masters. Yeah. And there was a whole thing with slag giants right before you get to the fight with the magma dragon. But you guys skipped over that. There was like a salamander from hell, and then there were these slag giants in the forge, and you guys were just beelining it to the area where you fought the dragons and eventually were almost killed by the magma dragon. Bipping along here, those are the upper levels. So D2 is all these salamanders that have made a deal with Titarian. They've like come from hell to help Forge. And then D1 is all like slag giants. Honestly, I think I may have even taken the slag giants out. I was like, we get it.
wait, D4.
That's where D4 you find all the plans and stuff.
The plants. And I remember going into D4 when we lost Jimmer and Thune. Right? Or weren't we in D4 being like, we need to find them?
Yes, after you... So to E, where it says to E up top, that's where you fight the magma dragon. You come out, then you fly back in, and you came back down, and you went in here, and you're like, what are we going to do?
Right. Yeah, I remember looking at those maps and as Dahlgrith and just being like, I don't care about the maps. Where's Jimmer? Yeah. I need a flanking bonus.
Yeah.
It was right that's around him? Here. Oh. Go ahead, Skin. Sorry.
No, that was just like, that's just robbed Dalgrith of so much of what he can do losing Jimmer. Because having that flanking partner. Yeah. That was
huge. And it's such a horrible swing the other way.
Right.
Because you bring in Nestor, who is a real prick. And is constantly running Dogrith down and is better than Dogrith at everything. So yeah, it was a real swing in the wrong direction.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Sir, for old Dogrith.
Well, also, behind the scenes, when this all went down and you had the fight with the magma dragon, we had to the pits, I called Skid or emailed him and I was like, I think this show, it's time. I think we need Nestor back. I think it's going to add a much needed breath of fresh air to this book because I can tell it's not resonating with the audience and no one resonates more than Nestor. So I think we need to bring him back. So I think that like seeing this circumstance here where Jimmer is not there, we're going to put Nestor in. And Skid was down for it. And so, he knew that was going to happen. You guys obviously didn't know, but when you surrendered to the magma dragon, that gave me an opportunity to bring Nestor back because he had let himself get captured, and then you guys got captured. And I think it was the right choice. And then COVID hit like four episodes later.
Yep.
Bippin
so
and
then we take off for a year, and then we come back to the podcast.
We can skip these next two. It just shows
for
you what
the Titarian fight.
The salamander would have looked like, and then one of the fire giant lieutenants. Here are the dragons of Ashpeak. This is that map here. E3 is where you fought this magma dragon. I think that was probably easily a TPK if I had just let it go out, but I just had it in my head that I wanted this other set piece moment before I even knew about Nestor. I was just like, I want this moment where you're going to be paraded in front of the fire giant camp and have to face Skirkatla again. So I used this moment and I don't regret it. You know, I think that was my best chance to kill Baron, but in my head I was like, I'll get other chances. One attack away from killing him.
Yeah.
I like the way the story played out. I know some people disagree with that. They would have rather had me just have me kill him. But I like it. Moving on, cool shot here of had you defeated the magma dragon, that's what it looks like, Tesseract, but you didn't.
Well, was there anything awesome? Because we didn't get the treasure, right?
There was tons of treasure there. Tons of dragon's hoard, magma dragon's hoard. I can't remember what it was, but it was a lot. So there was, to me, that was punishment enough. And then the final map here, this is, you know, we got into this area and F4 is where Quivixia is, right? And that's when COVID hit. You went in, defeated her in like two rounds. And I remember driving home and being like so disappointed. I was like, I prepped Quivixia so well. I just wanted to have a good fight and they fucking mopped the floor with her. I'm so mad. I just want to, what can I do next episode to make it? To make it better. I know that the speech at the end was really good, but and then COVID hit and we didn't record again for over a year. And then we came back and the way it played out, you skipped the encounters in F5, F6, F7, F9, F8, F10. And all of those people were just sitting around the table watching the fight in F11. And I think it was the best move because at that point I was like, let's just get through with this book and get into the end game of our story. There's no reason for us to come back from COVID and do a bunch of mini encounters that don't mean shit when it all comes down to like, you've talked to Quivixia. She's told you like, here's where he is. I like that. But man, we could have added another 10 episodes if we had done all those fights.
25,
you think?
Yeah, you're crazy. You just said the average length of the episode was an hour, hour 30 minutes. Like, yeah, that would be 25 episodes. Yeah. Someone would die, something would happen. That's the thing, is like, you're talking about chances to kill Baron, chances to kill everyone. Like, every encounter could have led to like a totally divergent path or kill a character or something else could have happened.
Then again, if you look in F2 here, you fought this creature on the next slide, the Helgigas. You think this guy's going to give you a two-episode combat? You beat him in two rounds.
That was the Nestor and Baron combo. Yeah. So deadly. Yeah. So deadly against melee creatures.
That was the first Gigia I touched AC of 9. That was the first Gigas you fought. The second one you fought would be the Abyss Gigas.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. I thought you showed us different art because I'm thinking of the Abyss Gigas art.
Yeah, that's a Hell Gigas. One of these books has like back matter all about the ecology of the Gigas. All right, I'm going to finish book 5 here just by going through all the creatures you didn't see. Not the temple priest. You fought a bunch of those on the next slide. But this is Hydroken, who was Quivixia's half-fiend daughter. Remember she said,
yeah,
like,
oh,
whatever
yeah.
you do, don't hurt my daughter.
Right.
And then there's Rex Scruggs, a hill giant emissary coming to speak to Tyrion. and then there's Maja, who was a frost giant witch, I think, or maybe Magus. Oh. No, frost giant witch you could have fought, who was here like treating with the fire giants. And then one of the fire giant ambassadors, Gervis. Again, you didn't fight any of these guys. And this here is that giant thing is an Eidolon, like a...
Yeah, you told us that.
Like your character, Avirxius, Joe.
Yeah, Avirxius, yeah.
Yeah, there's this little dude here who calls that a great image, but that fight never happened.
I mean, that's exactly what Avirxius looks like in my mind. Except, yeah, just a little beefier and not quite as pretty. But yeah, it's awesome.
I was excited about that fight. If there were any fights I wanted you to do, it was that one because it was just really different with different monsters after you had fought a million fire giants.
Yeah.
And then the last pages here is just Tyrion.
Great art.
Great art of Tyrion.
Really cool. Great art.
And then the final page is Quivixia.
Does no fire damage.
Don't the weapons do fire damage?
No, I guess
they have fire resistance.
Yeah. Stupid. The rocks, if they throw a rock, it adds fire damage. There's Quivixia. And then Tesseract, the magma dragon.
Oh, there she is.
Pretty cool. Wow.
It's our white whale.
That's the white whale, yeah.
The white whale. That's right. Nail of the bloon to the...
There was an early draft in my mind of bringing Tesseract back into the finale, just so you see what they're doing. But, it's like, fuck it. And then the final book of our adventure, Shadow of the Storm Tyrant. This was what I was always worried about you guys looking at, like, as we were playing. I was like, please don't look at book 6 at Barnes & Noble, so you'll see what Volstis looks like. And now that's an image of Volstis that's my favorite image, but...
He's so skinny.
Yeah, he looks like sort of
Volstis,
like old.
You must eat.
Yeah.
Eat, but it's
skin and bones.
It does make sense, though, because in that final fight, I was shocked about how Volstis was a caster. More than anything, I thought that he was just going to come in and be like, brash, brah, like slashing away.
It's just the orb that gives him those abilities. Without the orb, he doesn't have a breath attack. He can't call lightning and all that shit. It's just the orb. He gets the powers of the dragon whose soul is inside of it. Great, great art. This is all very fresh in our mind here, so I don't want to spend a lot of time going through the nitty gritty. I just want to get through this and then wrap up talking about how we feel. So you see the next image is like climbing the ropes, hanging from ropes, climbing up the castle. And
mm-hmm.
And then you see, this is just a general image here of someone using the Orb of Dragonkind.
That's him. I think that is actually supposed to be him.
Dominating the dragon.
That's Volstis.
You think that's Volstis?
It says like in the intro. I think that like that's it. I believe like looking at it.
Oh, that's interesting because I thought that was just like a man.
No, I mean scale wise, look at how big he is.
Yeah.
I mean it depends on how far away the dragon is, I guess. Yeah. But if the dragon is close,
it's a cool image, and you see him, the dragon sitting on his horde, and he just fucking, you're mine now.
Yeah.
Here
with
is
a little tiny orb in his hand. Cool.
This next one is the image of those were the scorpions that were cutting the chains.
Oh, cool.
Wow.
Cool.
Oh, they were so scary.
That's cool.
And the ash giant riding him. And so fucking cool. And you see,
showed us this art of the castle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, look though here back on the page with the scorpion, you see the advancement track. 17. The PCs should be 17th level before they face the Storm Tyrant and the Red Dragon Akazareth among the heights of Ironcloud Keep. Wow. That's one thing I read long ago. I was like, wow, they're gonna level up right before the final fight. All right. And you guys earned enough XP to do it. But yeah, there's that wide shot of I like to think that's what Zephyr Hall looked like before the
right
Storm Tyrant took it over. This next image is just a real quick one of like the way the crater fight could have went. Pretty much once you enter the crater, you're on a ticking clock. And like they suggest like round one, if the Ash Giants and the tower spot you, they start firing at you. But what you guys did, you just immediately teleported to the top of the tower and it threw the whole, all of this suggestion out the window. Because they tell you like at a certain point, you'll see a scorpion go to the chain. And then at a certain point, boop, 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 boop. But you guys just teleported right there and then came through the tower from the top. And by the time you got outside, I was like, okay, well, now I'm going to just have them run to the chains. And the scorpions were cutting the chains. And it was just like, let's go through it. So the next image is the crater, and you see all the encounters that could have been. And, you know, I exaggerated a little. You didn't go in the basement. There was stuff down there that was like the thing that was powering the artillery that could turn the catapult slash ballista was this like volatile thing at the bottom that could easily explode and kill all of you. But there was also plans for the bomb that was beneath the castle there. There were more giant. There might have been a haunt down there and stuff. And then where it says D on the map, there are all these like crystal lizards you can fight that have hordes of treasure that they're like lizards that eat rocks and then turn them into crystals. I don't know. It was something stupid. Wow. But it ended up being best. Just get you in there. Just let I knew the castle was going to be enough of a beast.
The only thing that bothered me about it is like how often you just seem to say that we ran out of the caldera and missed all this stuff.
It felt to me
so cinematic and so awesome. Like we got into this fight. We see that they're like, oh shit, they're here. We gotta go. And they just are cutting chains and we're like, you're not getting anywhere. And you know, and the whole thing was awesome to me. I didn't feel like anything was left unexplored in the way that we did it.
Yeah. There was no other way to do it when you made that decision. There was just a lot more stuff there that you didn't see.
Yeah.
Sometimes Troy talks to us as if we should have taken the scenic route to drive our wife to the hospital for like
while she's in labor.
Yeah, while she's in labor.
It could have been more cinematic, hanging from the chains as it's trying to cut. And
oh my god, a Dalgraith got hit while he was on the chain. He was like the one that couldn't fly. And god,
it was awesome.
Yeah, that was cool.
Next page just shows you one of the Ash Giant artillerists, and you see how gross they are. And then
they almost have like a tricorn style hat, like it's like a different type of helm and armor. I like that.
The next page is an image of Ulcroft, and Ulcroft was like one of he was one of Volstis's like main guys. He was the guy that that created the chains that held the castle in place, because remember you find in book five requisitions for chains for Ulcroft. Like he's the one that helped take that over, and he had a very interesting story. I can't remember that you would like never find out about his like sores on his face and stuff. I can't remember what it was, but anyways, he was pretty gross and you guys wiped him out with ease. Next page is the Yao Guai that came flying down when you reached the top of the chain. And then we get to the first map. And
ooh, that's a doozy.
You guys went to every single room in Iron Cloud Keep. There was not a single room or secret area that you did not go to. So you see what I was up against. Again, another just fucking sandbox. There are five of these maps that are all just as populated as this. And that was the end of our adventure. Joe, you might recognize this enemy on the next page.
Is this Krellin? Is that who did Dalgraith? Who got Dalgraith?
Art is amazing.
That's cool.
Yeah, the Inquisitor from Nidal, right?
That's so cool.
Yeah, Inquisitor of Zonkuthon.
Oh, the Cloud Giant Morgue who almost got Nestor, right?
Next page is the Cloud Giant.
And that's when that's when Skid was like, I'm never walking into a room first again. It doesn't make any sense. I'm never doing it again.
Yeah. I included a picture of the cloud diadem on the next page, just so you can see.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Imagine that dangling from the Storm Tyrant's phallus.
I love how artifacts don't have gold piece values.
Priceless.
Next up is the first of the generals, Sir Dasa. And again, if you leave any of these generals alive, like you did Nalbia, they join Volstis in the final fight. So there's a world where, like, they're all there.
Where did we fight Sir Dasa?
Right when you came to that next level and you walked towards that pit and a chain animated to grab Sir Will and pull him into the shaft.
Oh,
Sir Dasa pushed the bookcases over, remember? Yeah. And then she
came
up.
It was Sir Will's first fight back.
I have been.
Oh, I was so angry because, like, immediately Lexington got pulled out. God,
I have been writing this name down as S-E-R space D-A-S-S-A. I got, like, the Dasa part right, but I thought it was, like, Sir space Dasa.
Wow. Sir Dasa.
Sir.
Wow.
Did I ever told you guys how I thought the actor Omar Sharif? Because I like, hadn't, when I was young, my mom was a big fan, so she talked about him. And I thought she was referring to the female actor, Marsha Reef, for many, many years.
Marsha Reef.
Sir Dasa was a taiga giant that met Volstis early on in his adventuring days. And she is the one that gifted him with this thing called the Black Comet Heart that he used to take down Ironcloud Keep when it was Zephyr Hall. It was this returning comet that he threw. And that's why there's a hole in the atmosphere around the keep that Naxximara with Sir Will and Adriel could fly through because Volstis used the Black Comet Heart that Sir Dasa gave him to puncture the protective field around it. And that's how the storm giants were able to come in and take over the castle. Okay. So she has a really cool connection to Volstis and that's why he trusted her. But you guys, were able to take her out. Cool. Next image is just the little serving wood giant that turns into the dragon.
Yep.
And then next up, the next map. So the second and third floor. Look at these fucking maps. I mean, just you see what I was up against.
So F-36 is the orc party that we busted up. Metra was so excited to do that AOE horror on them.
That was a fun fight.
That was really fun. It was fun to fight orcs again. It was nostalgic to fight orcs after all that time.
It all came full circle, yeah. Oh, F-41, that's the chapel, right, where Sir Will gets un-insaned by Renfall. And then what, F-39 is the – that was a tough fight against the Elementals. Yeah, this is all obviously much clearer in our memory. This is just in the last year.
Yeah, just happened. And there's the big fight with the tree that came to life outside at F-30.
That was tough.
That one was tough.
That was tough.
The next image is just a general cloud giant veteran that you fought a bunch of those. They were on the they were shooting crossbows at you, and they all had a scope on their weapons that could see invisible. So that's why in that flashback when Ulfgraf looks through the thing, he can see Brander as a dragon flying with Jimmer, because though he was invisible, you can see invisible with the
that's cool scope. And a see invisibility scope. I never heard of that. That's
scope
great.
Of Stormside. It was written for this adventure. The next image is General Numerak. He was the orc general that had come here. He thought he was there to treat with Volstis, but Volstis was just humoring them. He considered them trash. Next up is the Abyss Gigas Katarnam. We will not talk about that fight.
Best fight ever.
Best fight ever. Yep. Really us at the top of our game. There's Nalbia. We've talked about her on the show. Obviously, she made it to the end. I couldn't do anything with her. She's an 8th level witch against 17th level characters.
She kept running away, and that did a lot.
Joe and I talked about this on the special bonus cannon fodder last week. I'm very happy with the way I was able to use her in the final fight, because I just let her use scrolls to kind of just needle away at you, and obviously to distract Jimmer away from fighting the storm giant. So she did her part, but one on one, you guys would have killed her. Here's someone who was a big thorn in your side, the spirit naga, Linaratus, of course.
And face.
We can skip ahead two slides to 194, Grant. This is just the fourth and the fifth floor, which are the end of the map. So the one good thing is, like, the higher you got, there were less locations that I had to prep, but the locations got increasingly harder because I knew that one of these was going to be where you fought the Storm Tyrant. There was an early thought in my mind that it would happen in F-54 on that walkway when Metra, after the Linaratus fight, after you were chasing her, you went up to the observatory and you saw that walkway. I thought about dropping it right there, but I was like, it doesn't feel right. Let's see what they do. And you then went downstairs. I'm like, good. I don't want to have to decide this now. But in the book, it's written, like, you could encounter Volstis in F-54.
This seems self-evident now that the progression is, like, bottom to higher, gets harder as you ascend. I think one of the best things that we had happen was finding the secret stairs and mm-hmm. breaking up. Like, we didn't wipe out a full floor. We kind of took little endeavors into these floors and came back, and it split up kind of the linearity of it.
Yeah. And that's pretty much it. The next page is the bust of Volstis, which is just a great close-up shot of him.
Yeah, it's good art, too.
The next page I've seen a lot of people share, but you guys may have not seen it. It's Volstis atop Akazareth fighting you.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the barbarian?
Amiri.
Yeah, that's Amiri. Flying Amiri and flying Harsk.
Cool.
And
Amiri been in the artwork throughout?
Constantly, yeah.
Okay. I didn't notice it. It seems like it's Harsk, Inquisitor a bunch.
Yeah, it seems like it's Harsk, Amiri, the Inquisitor, and Ezrin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's probably the Orb of Storms and not the Orb of Dragon Kings. Right. And then the final images are just that of Renfall's stat block. You know, and if you go back to, if you don't look at this picture and just look at during combat, Renfall avoids combat as much as possible. If forced to fight, he relies almost exclusively on the massive damage his corrupting cut can inflict on the living, coupled with any spells that might be of use. So, like, if you don't befriend him, he could fuck you up. He's CR-17. And then the final image is that of Volstis, the Storm Tyrant. And those are the six books of the Giant Slayer Adventure Path. You know, a big shout out to Michael, who is our employee two, employee three of the Glass Cannon Network. He's been doing a shit ton of work for me specifically, and he put this entire slideshow together. So thank you, Michael. That was great a lot job, of work.
Thank you, Michael. He's also manning the chat tonight. That's him as the nice. Glass Cannon.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure, Michael. Right? Yeah. Pretty sure.
And Michael has been instrumental on our new show that debuts tomorrow night, Time for Chaos, Mask of Nyarlathotep. But I've been sitting on these books for 7 years. It's nice to finally show them to other people.
Now you can delete them and get them out of your garage.
These are taking up a lot of space in my attic right now.
Yeah, I got to clean out the shed.
All right, I know we're running along, but can I ask you, Troy, what was your favorite book to run?
My favorite book to run was probably, well, hindsight's 2020, right? But I feel like book two was my favorite book to run.
I think that was my favorite to play.
Yeah. I don't even know if it's my favorite book to run. It's just my favorite book of the adventure. Mm. I enjoyed book four, but I really just wanted you guys to get into the tomb because then I knew it would become easier to prep.
I liked the sabotage elements of book four. I liked sneaking around a camp.
Book four was pretty great, honestly.
And turning them on each other and planting evidence. And
I loved all
that. That was really fun. Yeah. But book two is obviously the best written adventure, I feel like. It's just so having incredible.
It like on that boat. Yeah, it's like a season of Star Trek. It's like you're all like on this boat. Going from location to location.
Going into incredibly dangerous, unknown territory, you know.
And I'll tell you, when I was in it, I didn't enjoy it because, like, I didn't know how to prep it. Like, I didn't prep it like I prep now, where I would, like, write a bunch of possible dialogue or anything like that. Like, I was just, like, making it up on the spot with you guys. But I think that rawness is what makes it so memorable now, because it wasn't overdone.
It was also it was just so much danger happening outside of the boat that it felt like we were in a submarine, and with not knowing who to trust on the crew, like there was, it was a pressure cooker on the river, and yeah, that's like what I loved about it.
Yeah, it was great.
It was midnight on the Orient Express. Who's the killer?
Yep.
I take it back. We're incorrect. Book two, I think, is the best written book of the AP. Book three, I think, is our best work on the podcast as players and GM together. Like,
really?
The amount of characters that pass through that time in the story and the amount that we did to shake up and change the whole rest of the story, it's all in book three.
Well, book three has episode 100, which was the first true homebrew. And the last three episodes of that book, the Urathesh fight leading up to Della's death and Umlo's death and resurrection and Brander as the dragon. I mean, I've seen it all weekend long as people talk about what is their, they always cite those last three episodes as being like game changers. So if you could just stick around for 120 eps, we got you.
Yeah, so we'll hook you.
Yeah. It only takes us 132 episodes to get into a recording studio. If you can get through that, it's wild.
Be home free.
But I have weird memories about six, I mean about five, but like I loved six. I really did love six because I felt like it was right around book six that I was starting to feel confident in my ability to run the game. You know what I mean? Like, I know I can run a story, but I started to feel from doing Strange Aeons and playing in Skids games and running side quest side sesh, I was starting to feel more comfortable running this game. And I didn't through a lot of those early books. Just kind of wung it. And I don't know. I look back on it fondly, even though it's in our not so distant past. And the variety in book six was so cool. You fought every creature imaginable. It wasn't just giant, giant, giant. You were prepared for giants and you fought everything but. How do you guys feel now? Are you like, do you think you'll miss it? You think a day will come and you're like, I kind of want to step back into.
I mean, I'm glad that. Like, I wish I had a similar record for all, like, campaigns I've played, like, through my whole life. It would be so nice. Like, the campaigns that I played in, like, high school, middle school, if I had a recording of them, I could go back to those moments. It's such a blessing to have that now. Like, as we get older, you know, you can look back on this and remember specifically with accuracy, like, this time in our lives that was so important. I think it's great. And it does make me sad, but it also makes me just sitting here, how glad I am that I'm still going to be running Legacy of the Ancients and Raiders of the Lost Continent for the foreseeable future. this makes me all the more excited to, you know, keep playing those. And so it's a silver lining.
Yeah, it is pretty wild that we have this entire adventure we could go back to anytime and so many other people can listen to it and it's done. It's a complete story. It's a long story, but it's there. And yeah, you know, it's not only just a story, but it's a moment in time in our lives. Like we were talking about as we were doing the finale, like, God, 7 years ago, our lives are so different. None of us were married except Grant. No, we had kids. And now we've so changed. Well, think about when we listen to it 10 years from now, how much will have changed, or even 7 years from now. So it's like a fun little time capsule.
Thinking about like y'all's kids like listening to this someday, and like you know my like nephews like the thought if they even want to, but like it's there for them. Like if they want to, like I wish I had something of my elders that like left something of this for me. Like that would be really cool. So that's cool too.
Yeah, I always think about like how my parents don't have like a ton of pictures of them. You know what I mean? Like in the 70s, 60s, you have a handful of pictures from your wedding.
Yeah.
And maybe there's some baby pictures.
Or like a snippet of an 8mm home movie. It's just like, you know, 5 seconds or something.
Now everything's photographed. You know, there's pictures of me and my wife like wasted at a Christmas party. Like our kids are going to. I've got hundreds of those. But like, well, we also have a 326 episode story that we put on that is out there for generations of our families to enjoy and friends. So, yeah. Do you guys have any questions that you never got to ask?
I think I asked them all today.
I think we got them out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's some secrets I'll certainly never tell. but I'm glad we did this.
Me too. Worked out.
Me too.
Worked not tonight, well. the entire show.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely glad. I mean, I'm definitely not glad we did this. Yeah, no. The campaign was great.
This is exhausting.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was, yeah, it's just amazing to think about, like, yeah, not too many people get to do a 7-year campaign with the same players and finish it. So it's a rare gift that we're very lucky.
And to have so many people joining us for it.
Yeah.
You know, at the time and like into the future, you know, that's a cool legacy.
Oh yeah. And I mean, I don't want to sound like a shill, but there's absolutely no way this AP gets finished without the Naish. It would never have happened because the changes in our lives, it's the easiest thing in the world. As soon as you have a kid to just be like, I don't have time for a campaign. I can't, I'm sorry guys, I'll bow out. And then somebody's got to find another player to slot in, whatever. But when you're like, this is the thing that makes the money for my child, I have to do it.
I have no choice.
I have to do it.
My hands are tied.
My hands are tied. And so thanks to you guys, we got to finish a campaign that never would have been finished if it wasn't for you. So thank you. Because it came at a time when we really just started to get so many responsibilities heaped upon us. And the first thing that gets cut is your gaming, which sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. So this was our scam to keep it going.
Totally. Exactly. Exactly.
Totally. And we did it.
Yeah. And we did it. We pulled off the lie. That it's a job.
We can go back to our other jobs. Was I just going to say? I forgot, but it probably wasn't that great. I don't know. I'm really glad we did this, and I don't think people realize there was a lot of times along the way when this could have easily ended, for any number of reasons, and we stuck it out and did it. And oh, this is what I was going to say is like over the past couple of days since the finale dropped, I've been like trying to read as much as possible people's responses because I want to see how it lands on people and what people think and the questions they have and everything. And like it has been absolutely impossible to keep up the outpouring of love and affection for, you know, not just the finale, but the entire story and what this has meant to so many people. It is not lost on us. I've tried. I can't possibly read everything at this point because there's so much. You go on the subreddit and it's just post after post after post, not even within the episode threads, but people just like putting their own posts that are like, thank you. This is what I was at this point in my life, and this is what the Glass Cannon podcast did for me. I was at this point in my life, and this is what the Glass Cannon podcast did for me. So, you know, as happy as we are to go through this, we're so grateful that what we made meant so much to so many people. Obviously, it has meant so much to us, but like it adds that extra completely necessary level of fulfillment that it meant so much to you. And as we said,
and everybody who says who sends in emails, you know, to our generic email boxes and everything like that, like I'm sorry you don't get responses to everything, but I see all those emails come through, and they're amazing. They're so wonderful. So thank you so much.
And I was just going to say, as we said on the show at the end of the episode, this is just the beginning. We have many, many more stories to tell, and hopefully without the hiccups that may have been there along the way with this. So with that, I think it is time to finally close the book on Giant Slayer, close the book on this first adventure of the Glass Cannon podcast. It's something we'll always talk about. I'm sure we go to Portland and Seattle next week. That's all people are going to want to talk about. But when you listen to that finale and you have questions like, what does this mean? What does that mean? No one's going to give you the answer. Those questions are for you to figure out. I want you to now take this story and run through it in your head where you think everybody goes.
I will give you one answer, though, because I did see this mentioned a couple times. Please make a character that is a Knight of Highbury in your home game. That is exactly what that shit was intended for. Please do it. Instead of the Knights of Ozum, you have the Knights of Highbury now. Bring it to your home game, please.
For the Rose! And the light! folks, we will see you real soon with a new adventure. Starting next week, you're going to be able to listen to our Strange Aeons adventure from the beginning. We'll be releasing those episodes Monday through Thursday until we're caught up with the live shows that are happening. And then we'll be releasing new content just like this, live from our homes or semi-live. And that is going to be the replacement show for the foreseeable future until the next era of the Glass Cannon podcast. Thank you to everyone who watched tonight. We've had one of our biggest, if not our largest, crowds that we've had. We will see you real soon. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, Giant Slayers.
Beef.
Thanks for listening to the Glass Cannon Network. For more podcasts and live streams, visit glasscannonnetwork.com. And for exclusive shows and content you can't find anywhere else, subscribe today at patreon.com/glasscannon.
The Glass Cannon Podcast is a Glass Cannon Network production and is an officially licensed partner of Paizo Incorporated. Giant Slayer is copyright 2015. Giant Slayer and the Pathfinder Adventure Path are trademarks of Paizo. All Pathfinder images are property of Paizo and are used with permission.